regular meeting of the Town of Dover Zoning Board of Adjustment come to order. And would the secretary read the open public meeting notice?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, also known as the Sunshine Law, NJSA 10:4-6. Notice of the 2025 meeting schedule was sent to the Daily Record and published in the Daily Record on February 3, 2025. The annual meeting list was also posted on the Municipal Bulletin Board in Town Hall, on the Town of Dover website, and submitted to the town clerk. As a reminder, there is no smoking in this building. There are two exits in case of emergency, and this meeting is not streaming on Facebook Live. However, the audio will be posted in a timely manner to the town website.
Will the secretary take the roll call, please?
Yes. Commissioner T.C. McCourt?
Present.
Commissioner Nieves?
Present.
Commissioner Acosta?
Here.
Commissioner Roman?
Here.
Commissioner Davis?
Here.
Commissioner Fox?
Here.
The Vice Chairman Paul Schmolk?
Here.
And Chairman Frister is excused for tonight.
Will we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I ask for approval of the minutes for September 4th.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Commissioner McCourt?
Yes.
Commissioner Nieves was not here. Commissioner Acosta?
Yes.
Commissioner Roman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Schmolk?
Yes. Yeah, that's where I'm going. Before we start on the next resolution, we're going to do resolution Z-2503 first. But I'm going to recuse myself because of personal conflict, and Mr. Acosta will be taking over temporarily.
Thank you.
We're going to start with Z-25-0313 Rich Boynton Road, Block 803, Lot 2. This applicant is proposing to construct a 47 by 79 utility storage building and associated improvements, including a 4-foot high chain link fence and a retaining wall, concrete pavement, and bollards. The subject property lines within the industrial district. Council?
Thank you. Thank you to the board. My name is Russ Anderson. I am with Bertone Pacini, and we represent JCP&L as it relates to this application. Before I get into the introduction, simply because we were here last month, but I don't want to...
I want to avoid my duty. This application is being brought by JCP&L. If there is someone on the board who pulls a pension, does work for something like that, I'd like you to speak up now only because I don't want to start and have to stop again. So if the...
Yeah, I have a pension. Jersey Central? Yeah, I worked there 36 years.
Okay.
Should I recuse myself?
No, we're not short. We're five.
Okay, we're good.
I'm good?
Yeah. You're going to have to recuse yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
Recuse? Okay. I'll recuse. All right. No problem.
We're going forward with five, yes.
I just got.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Appreciate you speaking up.
A big employer.
I'm telling you.
And we did start last time, but we're going to start new.
We have to start new.
Yep. The
starting straight from scratch. Okay, again, Russ Anderson, Bertone Pacini on behalf of JCP&L. We are seeking preliminary and final site plan approval, as well as a few variances. First is a D2 variance for expansion of an existing non-conforming condition. The public utility is a conditional use in the IND zone. It's currently an improved site. It is serving as a garage and lineman yard. The improvement that we are proposing is a building in which there will be equipment stored as well as potentially some trucks. Aaron Dickerson, who is the JCP&L representative, will be the one to speak about the project. We have our engineer, Dennis Keenan, who's going to speak to the orientation of the plan itself. And then our planner, Wayne, is going to talk about compliance with all the variance requirements that we have to have. So without further ado, I'd like to bring up Aaron Dickerson on behalf of JCP&L.
Sure, raise your hand. You swear affirm the testimony to the board to be the truth?
Yes.
Can you state and spell your name for the record, please?
Aaron Dickerson, A-A-R-O-N. Dickerson, D-I-C-K-E-R-S-O-N.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Dickerson, would you explain your position within JCP&L?
I'm a program and project manager.
Okay, and what does a program and project manager do?
I run multiple programs, like the ArcFlash program across the company, and I run projects at the facility sites.
Okay. Is the Dover site one of your facility sites?
Yes.
Okay. How long have you been with the company?
Over 3 years now.
Okay. And has this been one of your project sites since the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you give us an idea of the setup of the project? What are we building? What's the purpose, et cetera?
Sure. So this project is just building a storage building. It has open front. It has pitched roofs. The intent is just to put equipment and like mobile equipment inside the building so it's not out in the rain.
What is changing at the property? Your building, can you give us the dimensions of the building, what it's going to look like, things like that?
I don't remember the exact dimensions. It's like approximately like 90 or 100 by 40 to 60, if I'm in that vicinity.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. There's a riprap area. We're going to raise it up so that it's a safer access. And other than that, we're staying away from the property lines, and we're just adjusting the fence accordingly.
Okay. Are there any other changes to the site going on during this installation?
For this installation, no.
Okay. As far as changes to traffic patterns, will there be changes as more traffic, less traffic, anything like that?
A little bit on the traffic, and that the trucks aren't going to be stored down in, sorry, they're going to be stored up out of the floodplain area now as opposed to in the floodplain area.
How about people? Are there going to be more people there as a result of the improvement?
No additional people.
Okay. Any additional signage as a result?
We'll have signage on the building appropriately.
Okay. So there's no additional signage at the street?
Correct.
Okay.
This is not really close to the street.
Okay. Are there other alterations to the site either now or in the future planned?
Yes.
Okay. What are they?
You're going to see a construction permit soon. We're going to be putting in there's a new switchgear project coming in. We're going to most likely do a new oil-water separator project, and there's probably going to be a paving project coming down the road.
Okay.
But they'll be separate applications to be looked at differently.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your timeline of construction?
I believe the plan is this year is going to be excavation and remediation, and next year would be actual construction.
We can hear you. Okay, as far as the building itself, is it a flat roof building, pitched roof building? What's it going to look like generally?
It is a pitched roof building. The intent is so that the water does, if I'm not mistaken, go to gutters. Inside the building, there is containment so that if you have a leak from a truck or something or a spill, it'll be contained in the building.
Okay.
Everything is being sensitive to the river that's close. We're putting it outside the floodplain. The idea is to pull equipment away from the river to be more environmentally friendly.
Okay. And just because it's a building that's going to be visible to the public at some level, Are there any colors that have been picked, anything like that to make the building? And if the answer is no, then...
Standard JCP&L colors. I don't think many people are going to see the building. It's very recessed on the property. There's a big hill with trees. So, like it's kind of off in its own little space.
I don't have any further questions.
Does the board have any questions? The witness?
No. Yes. When would construction take place?
The plan would be in 2026.
Do you have a timeline of how long construction would last from the contractor?
We haven't bid it yet.
Okay.
Because typically the way I run projects is I come to the planning and zoning boards first, because if you guys have any alterations, I like to make them before I talk to a contractor. Typically for a building this size, I would say about 4 to 6 months would be my estimate. But again, it's going to depend on lead times. And
yep.
With everything going on with the economy and everything, lead times change, so it's hard to give an exact.
And it's just going to be a metal-sided building using the existing concrete pad, right?
It's
no excavation. It's literally just going to be building around the pad.
So there is going to be excavation.
Okay.
We're removing the current concrete pad.
Oh, you are?
In that area, we found PCB contamination. So we're doing a site cleanup at the same time per the EPA requirements, because we are over the EPA limits. So all that will be taken care of in accordance with the NJDP and the EPA. It'll be a brand new concrete pad, and then on that, with footings, because it is a building, we will then be building a building.
So you've gotten the DEP approvals already on?
So with the new EPA regulations, there's three different options.
Mm-hmm.
So everything will be done in accordance with the EPA and NJDP regulations. We have an LSRP who's working on this,
okay,
who oversees all the work.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Yeah, he actually works for French and Perillo, so.
Any other board members, any questions for this witness? I'll ask the same questions that I asked last time, just so that's on record. Any trees going to be cut down as a result of this building going up?
No.
Any parking spots going to be eliminated as a result of this going up?
No.
This may be more of a, I don't know if this fits in my purview, so excuse me, but the water runoff from the building right now, it's an impervious surface.
Correct.
This will have gutters. Is it a dry well?
You're going to have to, I'm going to defer to the engineer on that.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next witness.
Any question for the public?
Yeah, yeah, open up to the public.
Any members of the public wishing to ask the witness a question? Going once, going twice, seeing no hands, hearing no voices, we close that part. Next witness.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. Dickerson. Next is Dennis Keenan.
Are you ready, ma'am? I swear I affirm the testimony you give to the board, shall be truthful?
I do.
Okay, can you state and spell your name for the record, please?
Dennis, D-E-N-I-S, Keenan, K-E-E-N-A-N.
Thank you.
Mr. Keenan, why don't you give the board the benefit of your educational background and your current employment?
Sure. I have a Bachelor's of Science in Civil Engineering from Virginia Tech. I am a licensed professional engineer in the state of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and New York. My license is in good standing in all states. I've appeared before various boards throughout the state of New Jersey and Pennsylvania as an expert in the area of site engineering.
Okay. Just for clarity, have you appeared in front of this board before?
No.
Okay. I would move that he be deemed an expert.
Do we accept the qualifications that were just presented?
I accept. If there's any objections, hearing none, we accept.
Mr. Keenan, you've prepared the plans for this project?
I have.
Okay. Why don't you walk us through the plan and go from there.
I brought boards. Is it easier to look at?
You tell me there's seer.
As long as everyone can see this, we'll go that route.
Makes it fun.
This is perfect. Thank you. So the subject property is 13 Rich Boyton Road in the township of Dover. It's comprised of 11.17 acres. It's known as Block 803, Lot 2. It's located in the IND industrial zone. And if we could, let's jump. You'll see the hatched area right there is the property designation. And if we jump to the aerial, I think it's sheet four. This is an aerial view of the property. This whole area is the property itself. The developed portion is what you're seeing is the pavement, the buildings, and all that. It's surrounded. North is off to the left side of the sheet. So to the south is the Rockaway River. Wharton is below that. You have West Clinton Street, Route 15 up above it, and then Rich Boyton off to the right. You enter off the site off of Rich Boyton. There's a long driveway there. It comes in. There's a parking lot up front. An existing building, that's the main building on the property, is right here. Then there's kind of storage areas right between the Rockaway River and the building. And then the back area is more storage. This area that with the box is where we're proposing the building. So you'll see it's kind of right on the edge where it's a wooded area. There's a wooded property just above it, and then the road with the residential neighborhood just above that. So the property is currently utilized as a line shop by JCP&L. It has that existing one-story building, and that's really the only building on the property. Historically, the property really has existed as we see it now. Really, I went back through aerial photos. It appears back to the 1960s. It's been this looking very similar to what we see in this aerial photo today. So we could jump to sheet six. There we go. So this is the site plan from the sheet. So this area that's developed here, that's really focusing in on the boxed area that we were looking at on the aerial. The building that we were looking at is right on that right edge of the plan. So what's proposed is a 79 by 47 foot equipment and material storage building. That's what's kind of got that shaded color right there. Again, it's located in the IND industrial zone. We didn't see any standards, bulk standards for the zone. We applied standards for the IND OP, I think it's the office park district, to this. So within that district, there's a 50-foot offset for accessory structures. And you'll see up here, we are maintaining 50 foot to the property line. The building itself is 23 feet 8 inches tall. Allowed in that zone is 65 feet, so we're within that requirement. And the building that's proposed is a three-sided structure. So basically, it's walled on this side in the back and then the bottom down here. This front edge is open, no doors. So it's really just a three-sided structure. So there's easy access in and out, but all the equipment, any materials that are in there are out of the elements, safe. And we wouldn't have any, so it's more environmentally friendly. The area itself now is fully a combination of concrete and asphalt surfaces, so we're not generating any new asphalt surfaces in this area. Everything is going back is either building or concrete. We are providing some limited drainage along the edges. And that drainage is in there just because we are providing a wall right on this edge down here. There's about a 5 foot drop between where the building pad area is and then this lower area. So you ramp up this way and then come in. So there is that differential in grade, and really it's just right now a very steep slope. So we're just putting a wall in there to kind of normalize the grade. But when we added the wall, there's a little height on that wall that's going to block water from flowing out. So we wanted to put some drainage in there so we don't have ponding, icing concerns in the back. So there's just some limited drainage there that then just discharges on the lower end of the wall. The wall itself will have a fence on top that's really just for fall protection for the employees. This is JCP&L, so they always take an extra step of safety caution, so they are adding guide rail as well, just because there is forklifts and things like that up there. So it's an extra level, maybe not quite necessary, but it's just an added level of safety to ensure the safety of the employees. You'll see this area is really, we saw in the aerial, is all fully landscaped right along these edges. We're not encroaching into the landscaping, so we're not going to remove any landscaping. It's all fully buffered right now. We're not adding any landscaping either, because really we'd have to take down landscaping to add the landscaping. Let's use what's there. But we are working within that impervious footprint that we currently have. From a grading standpoint, this, you know, there was some discussion earlier that you're really not going to see much of this building And that's partly because there is a significant differential between where the building is going and these areas up above. So from the building up to the property line right here, it's about 15 feet. So there's a big differential there. The building's 24 feet tall. So most of the building is, you know, below the property line grade. If we go and look on, and maybe you could zoom out there a little bit. From the road here, this property's fully wooded. The residential lots are up here. That road is 35 feet higher in elevation than the building. So the 24-foot building is really, if you're standing on that road, it's 10 feet below feet almost. So there's a significant differential grade and a lot of vegetation in between. So there's not a heck of a lot of visibility of the building itself. We talked about parking earlier. We're not taking any parking away. This is a storage area. It's going to continue to be storage area. We're not generating any new employees, so we don't have a new parking demand for the property. But there was some question in the engineer's review letter about the parking on the site. We did take a look at that. The building itself, the existing building is 22,000 square feet. So, you know, trying to figure out, all right, what's the proper factor to apply to that? We're taking what I'd consider a somewhat conservative factor of 800 square foot per parking stall. With that, you would need 28 parking stalls for the use. They have 29 striped parking stalls out there now, right at the front of the property that I pointed out earlier. So there's adequate parking. If those 29 parking stalls were all full, there's plenty of places to park on the property. So there's no shortage of parking. This place has existed like this since the 60s. No one's parking outside the gates, parking on the street. So it's functioned well, but I think by ordinance, it complies. From a permitting standpoint, we are disturbing over 5,000 square feet of land, so we are going to need to go to the Morris County Soil Conservation District. I should say we have gone to the district. We did receive our approval, so that's in place. We have maintained all this work outside of the floodplain and buffer areas associated with the Rockaway River. We also are not impacting any wetlands or buffers in the vicinity, so we don't have any NJDEP permits, so it's really this board that is our next step. So that's the summary. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
The board have any questions for the witness?
No.
That pad that was there, concrete pad, was there something there previous? Any idea?
There's equipment stored there. I mean, it's just been various equipment. I don't want to say it's necessary.
Sure, go ahead. So it used to be an old generation plant there.
Got it.
That had been since demolished.
Cool, thank you. And then the final question was, water runoff, is it dry well?
No.
So it just runs off?
Yes, it's just running off, which is mimicking what's happening today.
Any other questions from the board? Any questions from the members of the public? Going once, going twice, seeing no hands, hearing no voices. Bar is closed to the public.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you.
Next to call up our professional planner, Wayne England.
Sir, do you swear affirm the testimony of the board to be the truth?
I do.
Okay, can you state the plan for the record, please?
Wayne Ingram, Ingram.
Mr. Ingram, why don't you give the board the benefit of your education and experience?
Sure. Degree from Rutgers University in civil engineering and NJIT in land surveying. I've been a licensed engineer for 16 years and a licensed planner for approximately 12. Appeared before over 75 municipalities throughout the state in those capacities.
And is your license in good standing?
Yes.
Okay. And have you appeared before this board before?
I have not.
Okay. I'd like to move, Mr.
Without hearing any objections, approved.
Thank you.
Mr. Ingram, have you reviewed the plans for this particular project?
I have, yes.
Okay. Why don't you give us the benefit of your insight as to your opinion of the plans?
Sure. So we're here tonight requesting a D2 variance for the expansion of the non-conforming use. The use itself is conditionally permitted in the zone, but the current facility and layout were constructed prior to those regulations of the ordinance. And not all of those existing conditions meet those standards. Namely, along the front of the property, we encroach within the 100-foot distance from residential houses on Bowlby Street. In terms of what we're constructing, though, there really isn't anything that's changing our conformance to those standards. So just to go through them quickly,
The six standards for a conditional use such as this that would otherwise make it a conforming use. The lot size shall contain the minimum area required in accordance with the zone district. We clearly meet and exceed that. No yard shall be less than the height of the facility, nor shall any structure be erected within 100 feet of a conforming residential use. That's where we don't meet, simply by the existing building in the front. The building we're constructing is only 23 feet in height and does meet that requirement. So it's not, what we're adding is not changing any conformity to that standard. Number three, adequate parking shall be required. And again, we believe we have that based on the testimony you heard, and nothing is changing about the intensity of use on the site. Number four, adequate fencing to be provided. I believe we have that, and that remains unchanged. Number five, landscape screening shall be provided and building design shall be consistent with the character of the neighborhood. We believe we meet that standard. If, you know, this building's going to fit in with everything else on the property, consistent with, you know, what JCP&L normally does on their sites. Not to mention, we have a pretty substantial landscape screen, especially in this area with a municipal property located just north there on the page. And finally, there shall be clear demonstration in an environmental impact statement that the public necessity for the use outweighs the negative impacts. I think you heard some of the positive environmental aspects of this. You know, we're taking things that are outside, you know, bringing them in, so, you know, and making sure that it's kept out of the floodplain, and we're putting this over top of existing disturbed area, so we're really not disturbing anything new. So really, it's, you know, it's nothing about the application tonight that's creating this nonconformity. And I point all those out because in terms of the test, you know, for the D2 variance, you know, I think we're trying to prove our positives versus negatives. As you saw in your planner's review memo, I believe this will be an inherently beneficial use. So really, we're just trying to justify this with the negative aspects. And in terms of negatives, I really don't see any with this application. You know, I think from a visual perspective, we're, you know, enclosing these things, which could otherwise already be permitted outside, only improves the aesthetics of the site. We're improving the safety, putting them under cover with protections against spills, improves the environment, and there's really nothing other than that that I would see would be impactful to, you know, to the surrounding community. So again, with that, you know, I do believe that the positives of this, you know, minor modification to the existing site exceeds any perceived negative impacts, and you know, in reviewing your master plan and zone plan, especially because this is a conditionally permitted use as it is, and we seem to more or less comply with those conditions other than this minor existing deviation, I don't see anything that is in conflict with those plans, and therefore I think the variance could be supported.
Thank you, Mr. Ingram. I don't have any questions, so if the board does, please fire away. Any questions that the board members have?
No.
Any members of the public would like to question the witness? Going once, going twice, seeing no hands, hearing no voices, close that part. Okay, I don't have any more witnesses. So just in summary, we have a project for JCP&L. The project is in keeping with the site. It actually makes the site better, makes it more environmentally sound. It will improve it, and with, as Mr. Dickerson testified, the additional improvements coming up will greatly, vastly make the site better, which will obviously enhance service and keep costs down for everybody, notwithstanding keeping equipment in out of the rain and trying to organize the site in a way that makes everybody more efficient. You heard from the engineer, there wasn't any concern with stormwater management or anything like that. We were designing this building and this site to fully support the immediate and necessary immediate needs of JCP&L. We're not going above that. We're doing everything we can to keep work down, cost down, but do everything right by the site. And as you heard from Mr. Ingram, it's in keeping with and not contradictory to the zoning or the planning code and the need for the variances. So with that said, we turn it over to the board. If there are any comments from the public or other questions, please. Members of the board, any questions, conversation?
I'm not sure if this will be brought up later on, but the lighting, the existing lighting, that's used for in the past, will it be changed or added to?
Or added to.
Adding lighting to.
Correct.
So there's adequate lighting to get safely to and from.
Correct.
Okay. That's all the questions.
Council, do I have to open it up to the public again?
Yes.
Opening it to the public for any questions or comments on this application. Going once, going twice, seeing no hands, hearing no voices, we'll close that part. Any other questions from the board? I just have a comment before we proceed. I believe that JCP&L is as important as our fire department or our police department. They are first responders when we have power outages for weather or anything else. They're the ones that have to rush and make sure that our hospitals are running, that our supermarkets are open. And so it's important that they have a facility that is adequate to the community's service. So, you know, I take it seriously as they need the tools that our police and firemen and that other people need. So with that said, I would be in favor of it.
And excuse me, Mr. Costa, just for a second, I'd also like to thank our two pension takers back here. Though they couldn't hear the application, they're part of the first response team that was with JCP&L. So thank you.
They leave their families to make sure that we have power that we often take for granted. With that said, I'd like to make a motion to approve this application.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner McCourt?
Yes.
Commissioner Nieves?
Yes.
Commissioner Acosta?
Yes.
Commissioner Roman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the board.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And thank you to the professionals and Paula. Thank you.
So Glenn should be coming.
Perfect timing. Good man.
So I will make a note
to finish up.
Yeah, well done. Yep.
Vice Chair. Who second?
I want to even say.
Larry.
Yes, sir.
I haven't said it before. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. I had a question.
Okay.
They are back to the board. Yes, I am recording. So I should make another general roll call, right? Because they are back. Mm-hmm.
You want me to do it off?
Yeah.
We're going to let the record reflect that we have Commissioner Davis and Schmolke who have returned back. And so with that said, we'd like to do a roll call, please.
Commissioner McCourt?
Present.
Commissioner Nieves?
Present.
Commissioner Acosta?
Present.
Commissioner Roman?
Present.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes. Present.
Commissioner Fox?
Present.
Vice Chair Smoke?
Present.
We also have a change of board attorney, which is the record should reflect that. Welcome.
What's his name is here again?
What's his name? You can't get rid of us.
Bad old Penny.
Want me to do this, sir?
Yeah, that one I'm going to do next.
Yep. Okay, we are now going to look at case Z25-05 226 East McFarland Street, block 1318, lot 9. The subject property currently consists of an asphalt parking lot with a concrete pad that contains broken cinder blocks within the C2 General Commercial District. The application process to redevelop the site into a used car dealership containing a one-story office building with a 480 square foot footprint. Site improvement consists of on-street parking, drainage, landscaping, and signage. The application is exempt from Morris County's planning board review.
I would change in the agenda. I think some members are confused, but that was a change in the order.
Our apologies to the sitting people in the public or cases. Z-2502 will be heard lastly. So right now it's 226 East McFarland Street. Members here? Council?
AJ Cardile, attorney for the applicant. So basically we're applying for variances. So the square footage of the lot is undersized. It's existing non-conforming. The frontage is 94 feet. I think they'd require 100 feet, but it's existing non-conforming. And then we're also applying for 90% impervious lot coverage, which with this type of business is somewhat necessary. It's a used car lot, so that's basically what you have there. You know, this site has always been existing. It's always been a used car lot, I believe, or some sort of form of car place, probably going back to the 60s. You know, recently it's fell in disrepair, as you stated previously, and you know, my client wants to fix it up, make it nice again, and put it back to its original use. And that's why we're here, to get the variances. So I guess let's get started. You want to go first? All right. Come on up. This is the architect.
Thank you, swear in.
Sure.
Well, were you sworn in the last time?
I was.
And you still licensed?
I sure am.
And it's still valid?
It is.
And your name is still Emmanuel?
Okay, let's go. Cavrakis. It still is.
I wasn't going to try and say it. All right, so you have to still tell the truth.
Absolutely. I do. Thank you, everybody. I want to extend my appreciation again for last month's work session. We had an excellent opportunity to clean up some issues. First and foremost, we verified all of the board secretary that, first things first, Mr. Roman was indeed outside on the 200-foot radius. We had that reestablished, and the lists, the plan show all the proper names and addresses on the drawing. We went through diligently and made some clarifications on the entire application, some of them ministerial, although important. The signage on the building was clarified. We have a pylon sign that was brought in to conformance, relieving ourselves from an additional variance. We brought it in solely on the entire property within 4 feet. We gave architectural detail to the entire building, the material, the placement, colorization, and so on. Going off the report, I believe that we have addressed most all items. Ones not addressed will be held and examined under testimony today. I'm going to just refresh my memory. Testimony, hours of our... Yes.
Steve, which report are we dealing with? What's the date?
I believe we're now referring to the September 3rd. Let me refresh myself. In terms of hours of operation, we have the operator and owner of the facility both here today. I will direct his testimony.
Let's make it easy. What are the hours of operation? This is a proffer, and if they disagree with me, we'll get them up to square.
Okay.
What are the hours of operation?
10 a.m. to about 6 p.m.
No, about doesn't work.
10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
There we go. Okay. Next.
Yeah, that is correct.
What do you want to say next?
Sticking with the hours for a second. Is that every day or?
I believe that will be 6 days a week.
Good hour? Afternoon, evening. After this, you will always start at 10 o'clock. Start at 10 o'clock.
No, sir.
No, sir.
6 days a week. We made further clarification on the utilities, delineating separation of both water, sanitary, and drainage. We further clarified lighting, adhering to the town ordinance of foot candles and foot lumens through the entire site. To do so, we had to augment and reposition some of the specifications of the lights about the property to get the right foot candle. Mind you, that the lights are cut-off lights containing the light solely within the property. Additional details responding to the comments. Additional details for handicap striping, right-only turn in and out of the property. Stop bars and drainage calculations. We added another sheet for clarity, but the same amount of information. So, under my estimation, we've covered the entire comment section of this, and at the same time, we made application. We had four conversations with New Jersey DOT, sent them the plans, submitted application for a letter of no interest. We explained to them that the site is the same size, it has the same use, same curb cuts as it did from about 1960. I'm only hypothecating that number. And the ingress and egress is ministerial. If it's four, five, six times a day, that will be a lot, because that will... five cars a day, and so we're waiting to respond, to hear response from them. We took it upon ourselves to add notes. Again, loading and loading, again on the testimony, there will be no 53-foot truck deliveries, no flatbeds, no tow trucks. There will be no on-site mechanical work permitted on-site, no oil changes, no mechanical tools on-site, no lifts permitted, and so on. We went through that through our work session. There's no intent, there's no possibility for it, because the facility isn't geared for that, nor is it intended for that, nor do we have the availability for that.
Is there parking for customers?
Absolutely, according to the code. There's two customer spaces plus one for an employee. And furthermost, and lastly, in terms of refuse, garbage corrals, it's basically going to be a one-room office. There is a separate office. It's a code requirement, state requirement for procuring and safeguarding valuable paper, titles, and so on. But it's whatever the standard one desk office.
I'm just speaking near the microphone.
In terms of trash and garbage, it's whatever the standard office cubicle produces. Very, very little paper, a couple canned sodas, perhaps a lunch. We have trash within the building to be picked up during private collection with the appropriate recycling bins. We don't need a 2-3-4 yard container or corral or
garbage truck to enter the property and so on. It's small. As a matter of fact, even in my office, which has five desks, we end up with one or two plastic bags at the end of the week. So to answer the comments of the engineer, in terms of trash, the property doesn't produce anything more than what's produced on a typical office, and that's it.
I got a question.
Sure.
You could just clarify this. The landscaping... The landscaping that you have here, it's not within the site triangle for egress, correct? They're like little shrubs.
Most certainly not. The site triangle properly depicted on sheet 8900 is four in front of any landscaping. And with even that said, the landscaping is limited to about 2 foot height. It's not landscaping that are weeping willows and trees and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, the site triangle is fully in front of that anyway.
Would this be along the building or along the highway?
It's along the streetscape, along the sidewalk, if you will.
Point it out for them?
Sure.
There are going to be two areas. One slightly larger plan to the left over here, where will be about 18 feet long of views, also known as a form of boxwood, and then right in the middle, square in the center of the property, another step. Again, it's to give a little bit of softness to the property when you enter, and something to give a little bit of presentability. If you take a look at A900, the last sheet, you'll see that the site triangle over here upon the stop walk is well in front of that anyway, so they could technically be taller and so on.
Then I have one more question about the plan. You might know the answer. I'm not sure if it's been selected yet. But do you know the colors of the building material, what colors you guys plan to use for the structure?
Absolutely. If you want to refer to page A400.01. We have all four elevations depicted. Again, the trim on the building will be a white, bright white trim. The material, main material, will be a cement fiber, a hardy plank, a light warm gray, and the base material, a culture stone, buff gray, which is a ledge stone design. So we're using a few different materials to give it a high aesthetic appeal. Good quality materials that have just stucco, T111 and such, you know, to give it an articulation and so on, with your windows and doors, of course.
I have a question. I'm counting a maximum of 18 cars at any given time.
Yes.
I heard how they would not be loaded and unloaded. I did not hear how they would be loaded and unloaded. Obviously, the biggest delivery is probably going to take place at the very beginning. Right? You're not going to be constantly having deliveries of 18 cars. I see, you know, again, no 53-foot truck, no flatbed. So how are the cars going to get there?
Driven there.
Individually?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So the sequence of operation, the cars
are purchased via auction, and this is standard throughout the entire industry anyway. They're usually taken to a certain facility. They're looked at. They're maintained. They fix the scratches. They do some upgrades. They buff things. They detail them, whatever. Well, when that car is 100% ready, it gets driven out to the lot. On most lots, there are 2, 3, 4 acres. These things happen within the facility. Over here, the business today still has another off-site location, which is the one that they're operating today. But to clean it and make it more presentable, just like CarMax.com, you can get it with a vending machine. Well, this will be a one-story, similar type of situation. So the influx of cars will be 1, 2, 3 a week. Mm-hmm. That means you're selling 2 to 3 cars a week. Mm-hmm. So to think that, you know, 5, 10 cars a day,
right.
You know, that's windfall territory. Again, most of the sales and the buying is actually done online. We all know about this because we all purchase cars. You take a look at it, you do your homework, you do your research, so on and so forth. By the time you get there, it's usually for transactional purposes. Take a lesson on a car, you know, maybe kick a tire or two. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But, you know, once that site is loaded up, there will be very few ingress and egress.
But there will not be what I will call mass delivery of cars at any point. They will all be... They will all arrive on site individually.
It says so right there. We went over the scheduling and so on. I mean, it might take 1 or 2 or 3 days to get all the cars over there, but minus the parking spaces, the owner's car, and so on, it leaves about 14 or 15. It's not a crazy type of, you know, we came here today from the office 3 times. It's, you know, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear from the engineer.
Thank you.
Just before we do, do we know who's eligible to vote on this application tonight?
Everybody should be.
Well, was everybody here for the initial hearing?
Everybody what?
Was everybody here for the hearing that took place on September 4th?
No, not everybody. Commissioner Fox and David.
Oh, sorry.
The only person missing is the
chair. Kind of a work session, but it was also a hearing. So the question is, what's your recollection, Steve? Did we start the hearing, or is this... Because they started out like it was a real hearing, and this was supplemental, so that's what's confusing me a little bit.
I think we stopped the last hearing at an appropriate spot. I actually think there was more information conveyed today than there was last month.
But I think it was, and tell us if you're... in disagreement. I think it was a hearing last night.
I think it was, yes.
All right. So having said that, who was here last time and who was not here last time?
The only person, there are several that are here that were not here. The only person that was here that's not here is the chairman.
I think to answer the question you might be getting at, we do not have 5 people.
Who's eligible to vote tonight?
Only 4 of us.
Well, who's here?
All right, so Gil was here, TC was here.
I was here, he was here.
Okay, there's a little bit of a problem.
Yep.
And I want the applicant to know this, because this is a use variance as far as I can tell, because they don't meet all the conditions of the conditional use. So they can pitch all the shutouts that they want tonight.
You can get 5 out of 4.
Well, if I could,
sure,
I know at... that comment was made last month. Do you want to proceed, considering there were only 5 people here? And they did verbally say that they did not. So I don't know what that means as far as, and they said that at the very beginning, from what I remember.
That's terrific. So my suggestion would be we spend 5 minutes going through the preliminaries on the application.
I agree.
And then tonight, opening night.
Yep.
So that since everybody's dressed up and has jackets and stuff on, everybody can go.
I agree.
Agreed. Because we didn't actually hear. Their
I agree with
sitting,
your assessment.
Their planner
well,
is sitting in the front row being very patient, right? Are you a planner on this side?
No.
Oh, I thought you were. Are these the only, is this your only witness? Okay, so I think what we ought to do is spend 5 to 10 minutes just going through the application, and maybe the best thing to do would be to let either Stephen or you or me just kind of lead them through it to create the record, and that way we don't have to worry about who can vote and who can't. And that way all of you can participate. Is that reasonable, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman?
Yeah.
Fine with me. Well, it works.
Especially understand that there will not be a vote tonight.
I'm sorry?
With the understanding that there won't be a vote tonight.
Who said that?
Oh, there will be.
Did I say that? Am I talking in my sleep yet?
Oh.
All right, let's try it this way. So, you're going to be testifying.
Yes.
You want to do it, Stephen? You want me to do it? You want to do it based it on your report, or you want me to do it? I don't care.
I'm going to lean away from the reporter for this one, and can I call it Manny?
Sure.
What I'm going to suggest we do here is I'm going to put certain sheets on the screen.
Okay.
You kind of explain what's going on so the board understands what the application actually is,
okay,
where it is, what's being proposed, number of parking spaces, kind of recover some of the things that maybe came up in the work session, but give them a little picture.
Absolutely.
What's going on. Sound like a plan?
Yes, sir.
Are you
good? I'm going to suggest you block and lot and address first to get everybody oriented where this actually is. So address, block lot, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so we have an existing site here that's approximately 7,000 square feet in size, which is 6,902 square feet. It's on East McFarland Avenue, also known as Route 46. And through its history, it had a small building, bigger than the particular one that we are choosing to recreate, and for the use of a car dealership. So, historically speaking, the uses align. The property hasn't gotten any bigger or smaller in terms of merchment. There are two existing curb cuts, which are going to remain as is. We're choosing to reduce the size of the building because we don't need it at that size and to be used as a car lot. Hours of operation that we went through before, standard 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., excluding Sundays, so that'll be 6 days a week.
Slowing down a little bit.
Yes.
What's on the property right now? My question also.
Okay. Right now, are the remnants of an existing building. Is a flat concrete slab, dilapidated, cinder block, protrusions, I'm assuming part of the existing foundation. There may or may be some abandoned utilities over there. But basically, that's it. It's not being used for anything from as far as I was able to see.
Site's vacant. There's some remnants of a parking lot. There's an old building slab that at some point was a car dealership, but is now gone. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. I double team it because that way I can make it consistent with what I've already written.
Let's do that.
Keep going, Steve.
All right. For the record, we're talking about block 13, 18, lot 9.
It's me.
Is that fair?
I apologize.
That is?
And you need, this is a conditional use application, is that correct?
That was embarrassing.
Because you have non-conforming issues involving lot area, where 20,000 square feet is required, you only have 6,900, right?
That's correct.
And you need a variance for lot frontage, whereas the minimum lot frontage required under the conditional use standards is a minimum of 100 feet and only 94 feet are provided, is that correct?
That is correct.
And you also need a variance for proposed impervious lot coverage. The ordinance only permits 80%, and the applicant is proposing 97%.
That is also correct.
All right. In addition, in accordance with your application, you're also seeking a number of waivers from various requirements that Stephen has spelled out in his reports. Is that correct?
We are, yes.
Just, Steve, you can just, it's a double team. But
yeah, I'm going to weave back into this. To move off the existing conditions, I believe we did talk, is there trees on site and what's happening with them.
In terms of landscaping, I have a witness standing. In terms of trees, there are some. There's approximately, and I will count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Tree is defined by the ordinance above 4 inches. So right. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There are 8 existing trees on the premise. There are a few 2.5 and 3 inch trees, all of which will be removed. They're in on the fence lines. Most of them are in the parking areas, and with certain horticultural procedures and so on, we cannot pave the site by paving right up until a tree, thus killing the tree. So we're proposing to move this. We have the quantity of the trees over here. We have 8 trees. We have 4 3-inch, which they're on the schedule, 4 6-inch and 4 10-inch. They're going to go into the fund that we'll pay into the local city funds.
So the trees will be addressed in accordance with the existing ordinance?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They do.
Thank you. In terms of what's proposed, Manny, can you just walk through? I'm going to reference A300.01.
Okay.
I think that's probably a good spot to kind of have you explain what's going on in terms of future condition here.
Sure. The future condition will have 1, 2, 3, 4, 8. Aligning the western side of the property right up against the property line, we'll have 8 cars on display. We have an aisle down the center, which will have another car for display. We'll have 2 guest parking, 1 employee parking up against the building. We have proper handicap accessibility to the building, sidewalk, ramp, and curb that will accommodate, of course, everyone. There will be a row of display car parking in the rear of the property, and perhaps 1 or 2 just on the east side. But basically, we're going to be aligning the perimeter of the entire parking with display cars, and then for employee and guest parking, we'll have a few in the middle.
What's the maximum number of display cars do you anticipate having on the site?
I'll answer that in a minute. 15.
You're sure about that?
Yes. Okay. 15.
That's going to be a limitation. I just want to let you know that's going to be a limitation. If the board were to approve it, you would not be able to have more than 15 display cars on the site, plus 2 employee cars, plus a couple of whatever Steve decides or you guys decide are for visitors.
I believe the way it's labeled, man, right now is this. There are 18 cars shown. You have 2 labeled as customer and 1 labeled as employee.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's it. Those are additional spaces, right? So it would be 21 with the employees and 2 customers.
Well, I'm wondering if anybody's getting up to 28 because it was 28 the last time.
It's not 28.
No.
As far as I can tell.
It was 18 plus, not 18 minus. That's 18. My faux pas.
18 cars for sale and then 2 customer parking and employee parking.
18 plus 3.
21. 21. Total cars.
Thanks.
18 total. Plus 3. It was 18 plus, not 18 minus. My mistake.
Okay. That's good.
21. We're all in agreement?
21.
Yes.
We are now.
Manny, to that end, I heard signage. What's proposed on the signage?
Proposed on the signage, we have 2 different types. We have some markings on the pavement as a stop bar. We're going to have an additional sign, a right-only sign, for the main ingress and egress. Left-hand turn will be permitted. We're going to have a right-only. We're going to have handicap signage in front of the handicap vehicles.
All right, I'm going to interrupt you. Some of the traffic signage you've got to comply with MUTCD, right? The right turn,
absolutely.
ADA, all that. In terms of, I'll say, the business signage.
Business and buildings. We have 1 freestanding pylon sign out towards the vicinity of the street. It will be set back 4 feet in concert with your ordinance, and there will be 1 building-mounted sign.
size, the square footage of each sign, is that going to conform with the ordinance?
It certainly does.
Is there any lighting in the signage?
Yes, there will be backlit in a channel box. No strobing effect, no LED dot lighting. It will be diffused lighting, constant. It won't, again, strobing.
Okay.
For safety purposes.
In terms of the site lighting for the moving around the parking lot, things like that, do you have lighting proposed? And is that going to conform with the ordinance?
It does. On sheet A700, there are three types of lights. We have a majority of the lights are building mounted lights so that you can control.
In terms of the timing and the lighting, is it dawn to dusk? Or
dawn to dusk, dawn to dusk. Dusk. Time.
Downward facing, so it's not to disturb
the
neighbors.
All colors, light, as you can see that.
Thank you. Is there any fencing proposed with this application?
Absolutely. Around the perimeter of the building, we're going to have a white PVC fence, 6 feet, depicted on A800. Double-sided, equal, good side,
For my benefit, can you just label where that fence is going on the site plan here?
Yes.
Please, maybe we'll do it with the label.
On the back portion.
All right, well, that's going to be a submission. Do you want to do it?
It's on the plan now. I'd like them to be illustrated for the board, I think.
Yeah. On the back property line, we have an existing fence that goes to and fro the property line. It's destroyed. It doesn't look good. It has trees in it. So the entire rear portion of the property line, east to west, south, and the east to west again, will be a new white PVC fence abutting the residential area. And then there's two small existing areas where the fence was in decent condition that we're supposed to leave the existing solid white.
Okay, so there's a strong buffer there between neighboring properties.
Most
fair.
They don't want us. Yeah, they don't want us in. We don't want them in. And
that's my concern from where I'm sitting. Is
yes.
That there's no impacts, at least from lights associated with the cars.
Sure.
Stormwater aspects of this. Can you touch on that briefly? I think there's a few features shown.
Yes. We've depicted where we have three new drywall detention systems. We have one in the middle of the parking lot on the west-hand side, one in the front, and one in the rear. The entire site is basically flat. There's no such thing, of course, as flat, but all drainage will drain into the property. Nothing spills off on the sidewalk, nothing spills off on the neighbors, nothing encroaches. Everything will be taken care of. We'll run our calculations. The entire site will be held within. And then, of course, the building will connect, you know, which is impervious as well, will collect and run off to the one in front. So the entire site is being taken care of.
Thank you. I'm going to reiterate two things that I think we covered, but for the sake of calling this a complete hearing. Building colors, where do we land?
The building colors we've depicted, they have a light gray and a medium gray with white trim on the building.
Thank you. And using this plan to illustrate the conversation about trash, I think I heard that this is going to be essentially
Yeah, it's a ministerial application. The site, meaning outside the building, does not produce trash. Yes, sir?
The site's going to have a trash can, right? That's the testimony. It's where, yes. Where's the trash can?
Within the confines of the building.
Stays inside the building.
Inside
the building. Out on trash bay.
With recycling and so on. Correct.
Okay. How are we doing on the tag team here, bud? What was that?
You want me back in the gym?
I'm thinking I'm coming to the end of my checklist, so.
All right, so you're asking for conditional use variances, is that correct?
Yes.
And what are the reasons, what are the affirmative and negative criteria for those variances?
Personally, I don't see very much negative. The variance in terms
Let's not go to negative, let's go to positive.
Well, the positive is restoring a use in an area that we know that's worked for many, many, many years. We're not trying something new for the first time. It's been there for a long time. Perhaps what would have kept it viable to this point would have been doing exactly what we're doing now, cleaning it up, substantial investment, a new building, proper lighting, perhaps some landscaping and signage. So. In terms of that over there, there is a small net reduction in impervious coverage. We can't get it down to 80% because we wouldn't be able to park the amount of cars. But we did our best, and we are reducing it a few percentage of this.
With respect to the report, it speaks about demonstrating adequate space to accommodate use. You guys have discussed the recirculation, site circulation, is that?
Outside of the loading, I don't think it's been discussed. So if your ask is about how they're going to move vehicles around on site, I think that's something that can be addressed.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
Well, very simply, again, we have two curb cuts, one plan left, one plan right.
Okay.
One plan left, it has a 22-foot wide ingress and egress curb cut. We have standardized parking stalls, 9 foot by 18 foot according to ordinance, with a full backup.
You got a little issue here.
Steve, you got the baseball game.
I know. I'm trying to get this thing to go away. I don't know why it keeps popping up.
Okay.
I'm not touching anything.
For the cars open to public, for the cars open to anyone, ingress and egressing. You have a full 24-foot backup.
Yeah,
that's the same as every shopping mall, so on and so forth.
Okay.
Inclusive with all these cars. Now, the ones on the left and the ones on the in the back is going to be up to the management.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing different than valet service. They're a little bit tighter. They're a little bit more taken care of, and so on and so forth, because you have professionals, people care for that, not the public. So. We'll have the ability for these cars to be parked in there, and they'll be taken out by the hands of the living there.
Right.
Okay. And not the public. So we have conventional work in the front, conventional turning radiuses, site triangles were looked at in all conventional parking stalls.
Steve, you're
I'm good with it, given it's a controlled access in the back. It's tied to the building, but if they're doing that, themselves, they can make it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have more in your report that you want them to whisper?
You covered the parking, the lighting, the landscaping, utilities. You got the stormwater. How many employees again?
Excuse me?
How many employees?
Basically one employee, and then during the day as needed from dropping a car on and off, it might be occasionally a second, but it's basically a one-man thing. There's two rooms, again, one for public and so on, and one you have, there's certain privacy issues with valuable documents and so on, so there's a storage area, room in the back.
Okay. It's just the one space, that's why, the intent that there's, you need someone else to come in, I guess they'll take up one of the customer spaces, I guess, I don't know, right? Is that the idea? It's tight, so, yeah.
there are, there, listen, for a momentary thing, that's a very fair question. In the back where you have a stacking of the staging, you know, we did leave a little bit of room. I mean, you know, this could take another car here. It could take one more over there. I mean,
I'm going to say that's probably not the right answer. The number of spaces, so your employees are going to use the employee space. Is that correct?
Correct.
I'd like to poke at that. Because the question I have is this lot going to be striped beyond the employee and customer spaces?
Good question. I don't think so.
Would that?
We intended to have the left-hand side, not the rear and the back.
So the left-hand side will be striped, so that number, those number of spaces, that will be static.
Correct.
The back is where there may be some
leeway.
Yeah.
TC, is this something that you want to affect the entire lot? So
I think that if I think if we're going to set them at a number of vehicles, that the only way we can ensure that there will be that set number of vehicles is to stripe the lot entirely.
I second that too.
Maybe except for, I don't know, I mean, maybe even addition to those two on the top right, have them be, you know, side spaces.
It's to verify that 8 doesn't become 28.
Correct.
Sure, not a problem. Okay. That's perfectly reasonable.
I mean, and I think we understand, especially in the back there, where there will be movement.
Right.
You know, you're not gonna park two cars there and leave them there. You can't, because then you wouldn't be able to get those
correct.
Six, any of those six in and out. But, you know, obviously.
Lord.
Okay.
I would suggest, though, that, you know, so you have these two in the upper, two on the side there.
Over here?
Yeah, if you're talking about striping, you're bringing them up, you know, along the building, and then maybe leaving that one, like leaving that some space in the corner for an emergency space for an employee. I don't know if that, Steve, does that make sense to you, I guess?
You're suggesting taking these two that I'm pointing at on the, I'll call it the northeast corner, and
yeah.
Sliding them forward.
Right,
and then using this as a
emergency space for somebody.
I'd like the suggestion if the applicant's open to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think it's a question whether the applicant's open to it. If you want it, we're going to
do
it.
No. And you it's already yours.
We're not having anything.
I'm going to line here as it is. I'm going to leave this a recommendation.
We're not having any debate.
I want to
propose.
Use
variance, so that's safety, and that's being recommended by our eminently qualified planner. So be it.
Sure. Agreed.
Done.
Okay.
What else you got?
All
right. You and TCO on a roll.
Yeah.
Well, the only noise I throw to that is that there's an emergency door on the building that opens up, right?
Which is not. It's not.
Okay. We waited. It's now 20 after 8. We waited and it didn't come. Steve thought it was going to come up at 10 after. Steve, what else you have on your report?
I think we've addressed the report.
Okay.
There's a few outstanding items that were noted in the September 30th letter that you've either testified to or will provide as you receive.
Yes,
so I have nothing further.
Okay. You don't disagree with anything else in his report. Do you have anything else in your report?
Steve, we talked about that PVC comment in your report. Everything is stormwater
in
the roof. From the roof.
Item 11.
Yeah, we've addressed that on A500.
Oh, okay.
Is that Ms. Steve's delivery back?
We've separated the utilities.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We've separated them.
We've separated them. That's asking for a detail showing what the separation between the two are. I think there's a crossing, so I'm okay with that being submitted as a revision of the detail. It's not matter of shattering, in my opinion, at this point. But, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, does the board have any more questions on this for the applicant? I'm sorry, do you have any more
questions? No.
I don't know what's going on with those trees.
the ones that are all being taken away?
Is that what's going on with
yes.
them?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Are we going to get a revised landscaping plan in subject to the speed review?
So
is that where we're going on this?
My understanding,
clear on the law, please.
My understanding, they're going to remove the trees in accordance with the current tree removal ordinance, which does give them the option to provide a payment in lieu of replacing the trees on site. I think the testimony was that they're going to remove them, they're going to contribute to the tree fund in lieu of new trees. Is that a fair interpretation?
That is perfectly correct. It defeats the purpose to have those trees there, because even according to the ordinance, you need to have about 10 feet of where the pavement meets the trunk.
Defeats the purpose of what?
Leaving them there.
I mean, to your business,
correct? Well, to this business and development and so on. It defeats the purpose of a car lot when you need everything paved. They're haphazard. They're on the property line. If you left them there, they would probably die anyway.
I would also add, I mean, we are talking about trying to sell cars, so, you know, you got birds, you know.
Yeah,
the car's clean.
Other than the obvious bird droppings, the sap, bird droppings, leaves, so on and so forth.
Are we aware of how long it takes for a tree to reach maturity?
No.
So if we were to plant the tree today, that tree that we plant, that we left money for today would be reach maturity at about average 15 to 25 years.
Okay.
Okay, so if, even if we were to plant that tree today, we would still have to wait 15 years to make good on the investment for the money that you're leaving behind for trees that we have there right now. And so that's what I have an issue with, is the removal of the trees outright for the purpose of selling cars.
Let me ask a question along those lines then.
Sure.
Is there a way we can get some kind of a landscaping plan in that addresses some of the concerns that have been now expressed and the site isn't completely denuded? I think that's probably where you'd like them all to stay.
If possible, yeah.
But your testimony is that there are a few trees at a 4-inch diameter, right? And then there were some at 6. So just want to put this in perspective. These aren't large oak trees that are there.
Well, the largest ones are 10 inches. I mean,
okay,
it's,
so
I don't know what your definition of largest, but yes.
Yeah.
The ones that are 3 inches are really...
Those aren't considered trees.
That's correct. Okay. Well, then we just gained 4, so we don't have 12 anymore.
That's to be 4-inch diameter.
Right. And then I really have to recollect, but one of the 6 or 10-inch trees were dead to begin with. Like, they have to come down anyway. They're danger. They could already fall. So from the existing 8 trees, I think we only have about 6 that we're contending with.
About?
Yeah. About.
Well, according to our town attorney, we don't have room for about. So are there not?
There are. We have 1, 2, 3 out of the 6 trees are inside the property that you couldn't have circulation with, and so on. They're clearly depicted on A300. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 trees that we're dealing with. There is one particular tree that's out of circulation. If you want to keep that tree, we can keep that tree. I'd like to...
I'll go back to Mr. Keene's recommendation.
Yeah.
Is it the applicant's desire, I'll say at this point, to submit a revised landscaping plan with the intent of saving as many trees as possible?
Most certainly.
I think I'm looking at the same plan on A300. I think there's 8 trees here labeled that are greater than 4 inches in diameter.
Correct.
I see the, I'm assuming the 10 inch that you're referring to. I'm going to point at the screen a little bit here. I think this is the 10 inch that you're suggesting is within the kind of circulation area that may be able to remain.
That is correct.
Some of these other ones, I believe, fall kind of under that property line to discussion where when you pay to them, I understand the concerns that were raised about their activity. So I would ask that that revised plan just reflect where those sit. And I think handling that through the engineering department, so for the board's benefit, I do want everybody to understand there is an ordinance in place that addresses how these have to go forward. They have to get a separate tree removal permit. They are subject to the rules on the replacements. And that ordinance does have that option. While the ask is to save as many as they can, they do have a path to remove these trees.
Thank you. In that vein, are any of the existing trees going to impede the property owner's ability to do business? In other words, are they going to take up potential car spaces?
Some of them, yes. There's more than one situation. Some of them, yes. If you take a look at A300 plan left, where it depicts on the existing conditions, there's a 10, a 6, and a 3. That's right smack in the middle of the access aisle. Okay. The ones along the rear property line.
Yeah, I'm going to make a suggestion. Yeah. I'm going to use the laser to convey to the board what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. We have a 10-inch, a 6, and a 3 to the right in the middle of your access aisle. These trees over here will be hovering over the cars. Again, the sap, bird droppings, leaves, and so on and so forth. These two trees over here, especially this one right here, it's away from the cars. It's away from the fence. We can properly take care of that. And we're going to see to go ahead and give it a well and saw to preserve that tree. Over here, these trees cannot be in the plan. Mm-hmm. And the ones over here, I think the majority of these are 3-inch. I have to refresh my memory. And then, thank you. So we have 3, 3, 3, 3, 3. They're small. They have 1 5 or 6-inch tree and so on and so forth. So this one over here will probably generate about 2 feet. You know, it can get in the way of the car. We'll go ahead and submit a plan to see if we can see more than just that one tree, perhaps the second one over here, at least on the back of the residential area, creating more of a buffer, if you will.
Manny, to the history of this site a little bit.
Yep.
How the site previously operated. Was any of this installed intentionally, I guess is the best way I can ask this, with these trees, with this growth that has occurred over time because the site's been essentially abandoned?
Without having been there 2, 3, 5, 8, 10 years, obviously I just came to the game a month ago. The 3-inch trees, absolutely, they just sprouted up there. As far as the 10-inch trees, you know, I don't know how long it takes for a tree to grow 10 inches. I didn't believe that they were oaks. They're specifically, you know, they're lined along the property line on the inside. I don't know, but the smaller ones, they're not there more than 3, 4, 5 years. They just come up. They just weren't groomed. So the 5 or 6 trees that we see there, I think they're only 2 or 3 trees that were there to save them.
Do you want a landscaping plan to outline all this?
I think, yes. I'm sure the landscaping plan has to be revised. So,
and if they can't put trees in, guys, maybe they put some other kind of green buffer at least. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just the attorney.
Part of what's at play here is the variance asked for the impervious coverage, right? That's
it's that, and it's also the negative criteria. And
right.
The fact is that This goes to mitigating that.
Yep.
I would say I certainly understand and appreciate the sentiment, which is to save as many trees as possible. However, if a tree can't be saved, it should come down.
Okay.
For whatever reason, it can't be saved, it should come down. And we have, as Steve has mentioned, we have a process in place now. We have an ordinance that, you know, you will have to adhere to, and you have options there for the trees you can't replace. So I would appreciate saving as many trees as can be saved, and you know, understanding that not all of them can. Further, you know, the reason you meant to, but I think, you know, the last saving a tree only for it to die later because it's been suffocated by asphalt, I don't think is very smart. But if that's not going to be, you know, an issue, then absolutely, I think it should stay. If it's dead, it needs to come down. If it's in the middle of something, it, you know, I certainly understand the need to take it down, and, you know, you'll have to pay the town for that. You know, that's the, there are rules to follow, and I know the applicant will do that. But certainly any trees that don't meet those criteria should stay if at all possible.
We'll submit a revised landscape plan. I'll even do it in color, showing which trees will stay though.
Glenn, as part of this recommendation that I believe the board's making, is it to the satisfaction of the board attorney, the township engineer, how do we want to...
You don't want me looking at trees. So I think it would be the satisfaction of either your office, these guys as our planners, and then maybe the engineering department.
I agree. I want to make sure the applicant understands and that the board is comfortable with that.
I'm comfortable with it. We can take my box and check it.
Yeah, I go for that.
Would anybody like to make a?
We got a public to open up to, but I think there are also a number of other issues that need to be complied with. Do they need DOT approval?
They, I believe what I heard was that they submitted for a letter of no interest from the DOT. If the testimony was that they're maintaining the existing driveways.
Okay.
I expect they'll receive that, but when they get the letter.
I'm going to put it in subject to your final determination. They need Morris County Planning Board approval.
Correct. That's in my review letter.
Soil Conservation District approval, yes or no? I'm not sure.
There was a question about the limit of disturbance there. Hold on.
Who was accepted?
Did you, was accepted meaning you already got it, or you'll get it if you need it?
Well, we will certainly get it if we need it, but who was accepted earlier in the conversation?
I didn't accept it. I didn't hear anything.
Exempted, excuse me.
I don't think it's exempt.
The sheet says...
I believe the disturbance is less than 5,000 square feet, so
correct.
That you not need a permit.
Okay, that's fine.
So if that's the testimony, I agree.
Okay, that's good.
Thank you.
There's outside utility connections. You're going to have to get approval from Dover Water and Sewer for those two connections.
And that's
well
the standard stuff.
To the DOT point for that, though, because you are making the connection to the DOT roadway, although you have the letter of no interest for the application, you're still going to need a road opening permit from the state to make those connections.
Most certainly.
That's understood?
Yes.
And the signage has to, signage is all conforming?
I
don't mean from variance standpoint. I mean, does it just has to go to the engineering department for review?
No.
It's part of the application, and the testimony is that it's going to conform. So the
okay,
final
so
sign-off plan
is revised.
So they will take care of it. They will take care of it under the light of day.
Yep.
Okay. That's all I
can. That's it.
I'm good too.
Okay.
And then you can't believe it, right, Mr. Chair?
So any comments from the public? I like the way he did it. 1, 2, 3, we're finished. Anybody on this board would like to make a recommendation?
Make a motion. We approve the application with the conditions noted.
I'll second that.
Will you take the roll?
Yes, I will.
Commissioner McFord?
Yes.
Commissioner Nieves?
Yes.
Commissioner Acosta?
Yes.
Commissioner Roman?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smoke?
Yes.
Very good. Just an editorial before you go.
Yes.
We're happy that you're going to, improve a blighted area. It's a difficult area. There's not a lot to do there, right? We're very limited as to what you can do. We've had people come before this board in the past, say they're going to do this, and then a year later they do Y, or they sell the business and somebody else takes over. While you're here, we want your business to thrive, but we also want to ensure that you're good neighbors to the community. And, whatever trees we can save, the bushes that you're going to put there, that highway collects a lot of litter. People throw things on the side. We want you to make sure you're picking it up, right? And really being good stewards of the community, and the community will do the same with you. So with that said, we do wish you luck.
Steve, before we move on to the next case, I bring it up because it wasn't really relevant, but did we ever confirm the prior use of the site? Like, was it, I know you said you were going to look into that, like, it's been always, like, and at least, immediately.
You made a motion. 1990.
Yeah, it was. Okay. Okay.
Okay, thank you everyone. Moving on to case number three, known as Z25-02, 203 and 207 East Blackwell Street, block 1904, lot 14 and 15. The subject property identified as block 1904, lot 14 and 15, have existing 2.5-story dwelling with the rear portion occupied by,
Cipollini.
Say again?
Cipollini.
Cipollini, thank you. Roofing.
Okay, Cipollini.
According to the October 25th, 1991 Planning Board meeting minutes, a motion was passed permitting a roofing business in the rear of Lot 14. However, Lot 15 was never approved by such use following a notice of violation issued by the Town of Dover Code Enforcement Office.
Okay.
The applicant has submitted an application to formally recognize the roofing business on Lot number 14.
Good evening, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the board, professionals, and board secretary. My name is John Mills. I'm a lawyer in Morristown, New Jersey. I have the privilege of representing Mr. and Mrs. Cipollini, both of whom are present with us this evening. The property, as indicated, 203, 207 South Blackwell Street, East Blackwell Street, two adjoining lots, each improved with dwellings constructed sometime around 1900 in one case, 1908 in the other case. So there, you do, as indicated by your board engineer, Mr. Hoyt, have multiple uses. There's a multifamily dwelling on 203, and an office, and on 207 is a single family dwelling. Both have associated parking and accessory availability in that regard. To the rear of both lots is the business of Cipollini Roofing. That business has been in place for 36 years. The Cipollinis bought the property, you'll hear the testimony, in 1989. Mr. Cipollini formed his roofing company. He will tell you we spoke to Mr. Dill, the zoning officer at that time, and received a verbal approval. Based upon that, he did install the roofing business in the rear of the lot. Most recently, certificates of continued occupancy were applied for as to both 203 and 207. With respect to 207, we received a denial of the roofing business as being allowed on that lot, which and it's counterintuitive because the tax map lot numbers run counter to the actual street numbers. So 207 is tax lot 14 in block 1904. 203 is tax lot 15. But in any event, as indicated, there was a ruling in 1991 that stated that the roofing business was a permitted use on lot 207, which is lot 14 referred to in those minutes. when we received, that was in conjunction with the request for the CCO, we filed an appeal of administrative ruling with respect to that. I never did obtain or find the issuance of a denial of a CCO or any response, actually, with respect to lot 15. So part of the appeal is the administrative appeal with respect to 207, lot 14, which seems clear to me has been permitted with the roofing business for many, many years. And I would ask that the board consider, in the same respect, same vein, lot 15, because they're basically a single use across the rear of both properties, both of which, by the way, border on the Rockaway River, and both of which, by the way, are in the floodway. Failing success in that regard, we have applied for D1 use variance relief from the board to allow this use to continue. It's a benign use. It's been there for many, many years without complaint, and I've said enough. So we're ready to proceed if the board is of that mind. I'll call Mr. Peter Cipollini.
Peter, would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth and proceeds before the board's eyes to help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Cipollini, you and your wife are the owners of property at 203 and 207 East Blackwell Street. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you took title, I noticed, and the deeds are part of the submission. Both deeds are dated August 10th of 1989. Does that sound correct?
That sounds right.
would you describe for the board the improvements on each property at the time you took title, starting with 203?
203, for three family with an office in the front, and in the back there's a shop. There was a garage that was crumbling, loaded with materials and garbage sprued out all over. That was on 203. 207 had a bus, had debris. And,
that's a dwelling.
Yeah, it was a residence.
A bus?
Yeah, there was a bus. There was a bus on the property when I bought it, a dilapidated bus.
What about fixture type improvements, constructive?
Well, I interrupted. I just couldn't. When I heard a bus, it just confused me. So it had a bus. What else did 207 have?
It was debris. When I bought,
it was junk.
Junk, yeah, on both properties.
Well, I want to stay on 207.
Okay.
So 207 had a bus and junk.
Right.
And nothing else. No other residence.
Well, there's a garage, there's a residence, a single family.
On 207.
On 207.
Okay.
There's a single family in the front, a garage in the back, and some debris.
Were you able to ascertain the uses in place immediately prior to your acquiring these properties, starting with 203?
When I purchased it, I started cleaning it up. I spoke to Frank Dill. He said I was able to use it as a roofing business.
When you say it, you mean 203 or 207?
I understood it as both.
Okay. Yeah. And based on that, and that conversation took place sometime in that 1989-1990 time frame, is that correct?
Yes. The first time I heard that 207 or 203 was a problem, I went to improve the front of the building. I wanted to put like a storefront there, make it dress it up. I came in front of the board, and that's when the yard issue came up. neighbors showed up, had some concerns about a fence. Trucks would come through the left side of the property. They asked me to close that off, put a fence down the side, which I did, and my understanding was that was it. That was the end of it. I didn't go back in front of the board because I pulled back on the plan. I was 20 years in my 20s. I never did this before, so I really know how the process worked. I stopped the plan to renovate the front of the building. I did what was asked of me to put the fencing up and clean it up. And I thought I was in good shape until I went for this CO last year.
Can you describe for the board, let me back up, ask you a supplemental question. There came a time when you sold the roofing company, is that correct?
Yes.
And the purchaser kept the same name, Cipollini Roofing.
Correct.
That's right. And that is the business that's there now.
That's correct.
And you have a personal relationship, a friendship with the fellow who bought the business,
yes.
Is that correct? So is it fair to say that based upon that, you have a working knowledge of the day-to-day operations as they exist today?
I do.
All right. First question then, when you were operating the business there that sale occurred in what year approximately?
I think it was 2003.
Okay. So between 1989 and 2003, can you tell the board once over lightly what kind of operation you had? In other words, vehicle trips, was it storage? How did it work?
There was materials. We kept materials, tools. Some trucks there, not many, but we had some trucks that were parked back there. And guys they'd go out at 7 in the morning, come back at 5, basically working daylight. A lot of the employees came locally. A lot of people that lived in the neighborhood worked for us.
Was the was there ever a conflict between the residential tenants and their automobile movements and the coming and going of the roofing company vehicles?
No. Okay.
Question came up in the report from Mr. Hoyt, the engineer. How is, first for the residential's, trash and recycling handled?
That's put out at the curb. The town picks that up.
And how about with respect to the roofing business?
They have a 30-yard container, which they leave along the fence line, along Vito's garage, a rental guy.
So they don't engage in the municipal collection?
No.
I did forget to ask you, what are the hours of operation? You did say.
Yeah.
I'll say it again.
Like 7 in the morning to like 5 at night. And they just you know, pretty much leave the site and come back. They're not there working.
Okay. Now, your properties are bordered by properties further to the east and further to the west. Is that correct?
Yes.
Could you describe for the board, first, the improvements on the properties? We'll start with the one that lies left or west of 203 East Blackwell.
Okay.
Closer to the center of town.
Yeah. Alongside, there's two families. And a construction shop in the back.
And that's two families on one lot, is that correct?
Yes, and the construction shop to the back of it.
And what kind of mechanical construction?
I don't know, I think they're masons, or I see dump trucks, that kind of stuff.
Have you seen materials stored there?
Yes.
Okay. Inviting your attention to 207, which is to the west, further out of town, a lot adjacent to that. What, if any, activity is there?
It's a repair shop, I guess, U-Haul, I think. Trailers and trucks they rent out. They have a repair shop there.
How would you characterize the impervious coverage on that lot next to 207?
I think it's similar to my yard. So, I think
so
it's gravel.
A mix of gravel and,
yeah.
And some asphalt.
Yeah.
And I did not give you time to answer. Did you have an opportunity to come to know what prior businesses, if any, were on your properties?
I'm not sure on lot 14.
207.
On 203, it was a plumber there. I bought bought it from Schwarz, who I guess they had the dealership across the street, but he said a plumber was there, and there was plumbing equipment in the back. The building that we demoed was loaded with a bunch of metal. So,
all right. And as a result of your acquisition of this property, did the properties benefit in any way?
I cleaned it up quite a bit. Yeah.
And you've been a good steward of the property to this day.
I believe I have. Yes.
With respect to the roofing operation, if someone were traversing the sidewalk or driving on East Blackwell, is the roofing operation visible from that vantage point?
No. That was one of the appeals when I bought the property. The business is in the back. It's pretty much hidden. You don't really know it's there unless you know it's there. The front, I always maintain the front, put new roofs on, rebuilt the porch, paving, put a lot of money into it in the past few years. Places look pretty good, I think.
Was it your purpose in buying these properties to locate your roofing business there?
Yes. Yeah.
What, if any, complaints have you received regarding your business operation?
I have not heard any complaints.
And would you characterize the level of business activity in the commercial roofing garden as being consistent throughout this 36 years?
Pretty consistent, yeah.
And then, most recently, you indicated that you had sought to sell the property. Is that correct?
Correct.
In the process of that, the contract buyer, who was your roofing tenant,
yes.
Correct?
Yep.
sought certificates of continued occupancy. You came up with a negative on 207,
mm-hmm.
but nothing on 203.
He's since bailed out. He doesn't want to buy it. So.
Okay. And the property is located in the floodway of the Rockaway River, is that correct?
Yes.
Have you come to learn what that means with respect to a prospective buyer?
All too well.
Could you enlighten us?
People have flood insurance. They have to get flood insurance, which is very expensive today. So it scares a lot of people away. I've dealt with floods there for years. It's been good lately, but we had for quite a while it was pretty bad over there.
How many times have you had to replace furnaces?
Don't even ask. I stopped counting. Okay.
And your request is that this board continue to allow the roofing business to exist.
Yes.
I have no more questions of Mr. Cipollone.
All right, ready? Can you bring up maybe just some of those photos, if you don't mind, just zoom in so that the board can maybe orientate themselves a little bit?
Before I do that, I'm going to ask Mr. Keene.
Of course, absolutely.
Is this two separate applications, how we're acting on this? Because this plan is technically tied to the site plan application that would follow, I think, the outcome of the first ask. So I just want to make sure.
Council,
I don't want to tie them together.
What's the method to your madness?
It's one application for two properties, and within that context, it's divided in half for an administrative appeal for the denial of the CCO on 207. But I'm asking the board to consider 203 as part of that because we didn't receive a denial on that except back in 1991 when Mr. Bill indicated anecdotally that the roofing business was only allowed to exist on 207. So we have the denial that was issued with respect to 207 for the CCO most in October of last year, and that's what triggered the appeal to this body on the administrative denial. But that kind of leaves us in limbo with 203. So they're fungible. The roofing business stretches across both of them with no division in the roofing business between lot to lot, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's my madness. I won't even say method.
I was giving you credit.
Thank you.
So then we're comfortable with it. addressing that question, or do they exist separately? What are we doing?
I'm a little confused because it's the, you know, it's based off of the engineer's report, the Green Parks report, the roofing business was permitted only on the rear of lot 14, which is 207. So why is 203 included in that deferred D2404 then?
Well, I don't have a denial of the business on 203.
I understand. Yeah.
So I didn't have a trigger to file the A appeal on 203. Mm-hmm. But I'm suggesting that charitably maybe the board could consider that.
I don't have any problem with it's an ongoing use, it's a singular use.
Thank you.
I certainly knew Mr. Dill because he was all over the county. I don't have any problem in suggesting to the board that we take it as a unitary site because it's a unitary ownership.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, it's not like we got a guy selling fish over here and apples over here. We got a roofing business in the back of the property, but we just don't have all the paperwork that we need on all of the parcels. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely. I would not have been able to say it as eloquently as you did.
You're really working me hard. So I don't have any problems to you.
All right.
And just, the bottom line in being practical about this, we have to try and figure out what needs to be done. We have an applicant that is working two different sites. We have uses up in the front of the property that are more residential, I guess, in nature. And then we have a unitary use in the back that I think, from what I heard, spans both parcels.
Correct.
So we may as well, however we wind up, I'll figure out legally how you got to do it, but I think you got to do something with it to straighten it out one way or the other. I don't know what your decision's going
to
be.
It just seemed to be a non sequitur that two lots that are functionally equal, in fact, if the board looked at it, I'm sure they did, the lot more suitable for the business was 203 because it had an office that was used in conjunction with the roofing business and a greater number of outbuildings. But yet the denial was on, the approval rather was for 207. So,
I mean, your position is from a land use perspective, not a real estate perspective.
Right.
From a land use perspective, the use merged on the two lots.
I like that. Thank you. What he said. So that's our case on the administrative appeal. I don't know if you wish to consider that or want me to go directly to the D variance, but if you grant the administrative appeal, our work here is done.
Vice Chair, if I may, just for clarity here, I think I understand we have a lot or address 203 East Blackwell Street, right? It's a separate lot.
Yes.
It goes pretty far back, I think 225 feet or something to that effect.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Then you have another next door, 207, separate tax lot, right, that you see there. And in front of those lots, we'll say facing, I guess that would be the south side, there are two residents.
With street frontage.
Street frontage.
That's the easy.
Yep, thank
I'm
you.
Just going to help you.
Thank you.
You just keep going. You're doing great.
Yep, there are two street frontage residents, two families, right?
A three family on the left and
yep.
A single family on the right.
Okay.
This is a single family.
Yep. And however, in the back, even though there's two separate properties, it goes across.
Correct.
For the roofing business, of which there's some supplies and materials.
That's correct.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And you were only approved for
this one here.
Yep. And when you went or someone went to go get a certificate of occupancy, someone said, wait a minute, that left side isn't zoned properly. Cliff notes, fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay. What happens when you, at some point, invest in these two properties and then someone else buys them and wants to split them up and maybe there's a single resident that wants to, if we approve it, that roofing business stays, right? Like, it's there forever.
It continues to operate
it would be restricted, if should this board bless this, I'll defer to Mr. Kynes, but it would be restricted to this operation in this scope, period. So if there's a change of use, they're back here, unless it was something, well, they're still back here because of multiple uses on one property, but unless it was a conforming use.
I guess it's a little bit of a double-edged sword if you want to sell the property, because you're selling the back, right? You really can't sell them individually as a single family and say, oh, by the way, I have a roofing company that's going to use your backyard.
It's pretty much, it has to go as a package here to make sense and to work. Yeah.
No matter what you do, it's pretty.
1 second.
Thank you, sir.
This is why I asked how we were going to merge this situation, right? Because coming into this, the first ask is how the zoning officer interpreted everything. If one way or the other, if there's an agreement that the zoning officer interpreted it correctly, they're here with a site plan application that I can comment on, because we'd look to formalize how this operates, right? Parking requirements for both the residences, the business operations, so on and so forth. If the board disagrees with the zoning officer, feels that this is essentially an approved use based on the prior items, then they have their approval to operate as they are. So I toe the line on this, and I'm going to look at Mr. Keynes to see how much he thinks I can go forward with this. Because I think it's one has to be ironed out before two.
I know how I would want to proceed, but
I have a
council next to me.
I have an administrative question, and I've waited for this to be brought up, and I'm hoping I have bad information. But when I saw these addresses, for some reason, a light went off in my head, and I looked, and they're both listed as under contract. Is that accurate?
No. They're not. In fact, they're not even on the market.
They are.
Oh, they're on the market?
But these things have been under contract 5 times since I've owned them. And they never go through.
Okay, let's see where TC is going.
Well, this sort of is the point I think Commissioner Acosta was making, is that if we approve this, it stays, whether the property it changes ownership or not. And if the future owner, if it is currently under contract, does the future owner want to keep this business? Does the person who's on, is the person or people under contract for 203 and 207, are they wanting to keep the roofing business in place?
That's how it's been presented, to stay as it is, with a lease, with the roofing company having a lease to use the yard.
Okay.
So that's the intention. Like, yes. I said, have been under contract before, so these contracts don't, yeah. You know, it might be,
you know, undermining your ability to sell the property. So, and, you know, it's, you got this, these conflicting uses there. You know, I'm thinking, you know, what I've seen before, you know, is, you know, typically if a use ceases, it's a non-conforming use that ceases to operate. That's it. You know, you can't continue that non-conforming use. I just feel like if there should be some kind of language or condition that if whoever buys it, whoever purchases the property, that rare use would cease. You know,
I'm confused. How did you get to that? Because there's a roofing business there right now. Right. So why would it cease just because it was? I'm not arguing, just trying to understand the logic.
Because
two separate properties.
The plan is to stay as it is. That's the intention.
What we got a three, a single, and a roofing business in the back.
Yeah. What address does the roofing company use with regards to those two locations? 203 or 207?
They don't get any mail there. They don't. They have a building up the street, So they're on Blackwell Street also.
Yeah.
Down a few buildings.
Well, before that one opened.
What was 203? 203 is where the office was.
And 203, help me, is the one on the left or the right side?
Is
the one closer to downtown.
This one here, the one that's not approved. The office is right up there in the front, and then a shop was in the back.
So they are not using the commercial office space at 203 as the plans indicate?
Well, it's currently empty.
So that's a no?
Correct.
Okay.
And if those properties are under contract and we approve today, wouldn't that change the terms of the contract that those two properties are under?
I'm sorry.
If those two properties are under contract right now and we were to approve today, wouldn't that change the terms of the contract that those properties are under at this current moment?
No.
How so?
How would it change?
Does the contract that you have in hand specifically state that the buyers are going to keep the roofing business in place?
I believe it does. The intention is...
No, I'm not talking about intention. Is it stated in the contract that the offer that you have accepted, that you are demanding as the seller for them to keep the property use as it is?
They are buying it with the leases for the residents and the yard. So I believe their intention is to keep everything as it is because there's a 5-year lease for the yard. So I can only assume that their intention is to keep everything as it is.
So when does the lease for the yard expire?
In 5 years.
From now? You just signed a new lease?
Correct.
This is tricky for us, respectfully, and this is why we're asking these questions, because what we say lives forever, right?
I guess.
So we need to be thoughtful on both parties of what we agree here.
Yeah, I mean, and also the issue is the non-conformity, and I need to clarify, is the residential portion. So,
did everybody get that?
The non-conformity is the residential portion?
Right, the commercial in the back, or industrial, or whatever we're going to call it, that's the permitted use.
Mm.
That's the one. The permitted use is what you're all scratching your heads at.
Mm-hmm.
The permitted use is on the left, 203.
203.
Well, for roofing purposes, it's the one on the right.
207.
Yes.
207.
Exactly.
I think what Alex is saying, because it's in the C1 zone,
mm-hmm.
the retail/commercial, retail commercial is C1. The business is actually permitted in the zone. The residential is the non-permitted use.
Ah.
Correct?
But the residentials have been there since, as I indicated, 1900 and 1908.
And you don't want to displace people that are living here, right?
We'd have to pay for their lease for 6 months elsewhere if we displaced them.
More than that.
Yeah.
Well, it's just commercial on the first floor. The second floors are the apartments, right?
Yes, there are apartments upstairs and on the side, and the office in the front. Yeah.
So 207 is not permitted for residential? It's not been given either?
I don't know when Dover got zoning, but I would suspect that having been constructed respectfully in 1908, we probably predated the zoning with that.
That's
fair.
I think the first zoning case was Amber Realty versus Euclid, Ohio in
1921.
Come on, let's give it.
Yeah.
26.
Okay, see, well, that's why you get the big money.
Seems to me the easiest and most direct way, without getting our socks all knotted up in the dryer, is certainly he's entitled to seek an interpretation or some kind of an opinion under the appeal of this. But in order to kind of put it on the right footing, seems to me the better way and the way with more certainty for everyone here, not only for the board who I'm representing, but for counsel and his client, would be to just treat this as a variance, clean it up, get it to where you want to get it to. And the interesting little wrinkle here is that the businesses in the rear are not the issue. It's the stuff up in front that I guess is the issue.
correct, counsel?
I respectfully disagree.
That's why I'm asking.
I think we're pretty clear that the two residential uses are pre-existing non-conforming, and they've not been expanded or enlarged.
Okay.
And in the C1 zone, it's more retail, bars, and what have you. I don't think a more commercial use like the roofing business is, in fact, permitted in C1. I could defer to our engineer and planner.
Well, it sounds like you're disagreeing with our guy, though.
Yeah,
on the rear part.
Yeah, you're not allowed to have residents there. There's no residential use permitted in that zone. That's what it is. So it's.
Yeah.
Are you disagreeing with that?
No. I'm just saying that, however it came to be, it was approved by Mr. Dill. That's why I parsed this as an A appeal, because he...
You did the right thing.
Yeah.
No question.
But in 1991, he affirmed in that planning board motion or memoranda that roofing business was approved on 207, which he referred to as Lot 14, maintaining its tax map number. And then, you know, as you said, counsel, the use is unified, so 203 kind of came along for the ride. But it does need, as both professionals, all three professionals, that you need to clean it up, put it in a bag.
It needs a good housekeeping seal of approval so that 20 years from now, when another group is sitting here, they won't be scratching their heads like you're scratching yours. Now what?
Okay.
How do we get there?
I hate to relinquish whatever ground I may have gained on the A appeal and then just proceed with the D1.
We can hold the A in abeyance until we see what the testimony is.
Right. If that's the pleasure of the board, then...
I got it.
You're allowing me to proceed on this without prejudice, and that's wonderful. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions.
Well, let's just make sure that all of the gentlemen sitting behind them.
Summarize, please.
I think that there was a lot of information as I read this that I found going back and forth. And there was a little bit of this and a little bit of that with Mr. Dill. And a number of you have been around and knew Frank. And smells of Frank Dill. This is the best of Frank Dill. If I were counsel, I would be saying, well, I think I got it, but what I'd like to do is put the whole case in, and then you all decide which way you want to go. But I think I'm entitled to all of the activities up in front, and I think I'm entitled to the activity for the roofing business that spans both parcels. That's the argument, I think, that he's making.
That's an adoptive admission that I agree with.
And that's the argument he's making. And if you decide that you agree with my proffer, then what you can do is you can put appropriate, and three of us down here in the basement will guide you, will help you with the conditions. You can put appropriate conditions on so it stays at whatever you find it should stay at. To do it any other way, you're going back into the annals of history and trying to put together all of the information council put together. I'd rather start a little bit afresh, but you got most of the facts anyway, because I think council did a pretty good job of laying everything out for you. So you set it up, and if, I'm not telling you to do this, but if you were to approve it, what you would be approving is the building with the three apartments and whatever else is going on there on this lot, the building with this residential on this lot, and a roofing business on the back, and you would be approving that under your use variance, and you could put conditions on it that would say, no change in use, it's got to stay as this, any change in use in the back, let's forget the front for the moment. Any change of use in the back, you got to come back before the board, because that impacts the use variance on the residential stuff.
Agreed.
It becomes a
tricky piece of property in that regard.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I can't say that after doing this for about 45 years, I've had one of these before, so God bless you. But I think that's the way to try and create a clean record. And I think council has laid out the fact that he at least believes, and I'm not making his case, but at least I heard, that he at least believes that he is entitled to continue doing what he is doing today. His problem or his challenge is he doesn't have a piece of paper that says he has the Dover Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval. That's what he's seeking.
All right.
Is that a fair? Yeah. I'm really not trying to prejudice you.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, you're good.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
You're good. I cleaned it up.
I just have one more question then. And just the fact that it's under contract, does that change any of the terms of your summary there?
No. I don't care what the contract is. If whatever you decide, you decide. If he has to modify his contract, or if the contract goes bye-bye, to me that's a non-issue. I don't know whether you agree or disagree.
I agree. The contract purchaser is the contract purchaser. The owner stands before you. And whatever relief you choose to give runs with the land.
So that puts it entirely in this board's hands.
Okay. Is the owner of the current roofing business here?
The roofing business? No, yes. He's not. I don't think so.
No.
No.
I ask that it's because it is convoluted, right?
Yeah.
Like you own the property, but another person is operating the roofing business,
right,
which has access to that property back there, who's using that property, but it's tied up with you.
it's also, as I understand it, subject to your correcting me or Steve, it's also, that's the permitted use. That's not the difficult part of the application, other than the fact that it's on both lots. That's permitted in both zones, on both parcels, right?
Yeah.
So that's not, that the roofing, forget the front, the roofing business in the back is a permitted use, so that becomes site plan 101.
But on his property currently?
Well, on the two properties. Yes.
So currently it's permitted on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can it be on both of them?
Yeah. Why is it? What's the question as to why it would not be permitted on the second one based on current zoning, Steve?
I'm sorry. On the zoning, yes, it's allowable on both. The prior approvals only allowed it to be on one.
Okay,
so
you and I could get into an intellectual argument that would say, well, he didn't get site plan approval on the one side.
Okay.
That's why we're here and we're all dressed
up.
So it's not as to the use for the roofing business. That's good. It's just he doesn't have the good housekeeping seal saying he got preliminary and final site plan approval, I think.
Okay.
But if I'm missing something, by all means, because I read this stuff, and I said, you know, I read it. I'm not spending any more time on it. I want to hear it live up close and personal. Okay.
So basically, you're the landlord.
Would you like to make any comments?
For all the two houses,
correct,
three apartments, the one apartment, and then the section in the back, which you no longer own the business, which is sold to someone else, that's running a roofing company. Even if it's not Cipollini, it could be any other roofing company. So you're just the landlord for all this property.
Yeah, I'm carrying the bags.
Okay. And the two apartments in the front, I just want to get this straight, it's zone C1, right? So it was?
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
So technically, no apartments are allowed on that, on Z1. C1.
I think that's what I heard.
Right? But there's on the left side of it, there's several other houses that have apartments on the first floor.
But it sounded like that.
And that's all C1 as well.
Yes. And it sounded like that was all pre-existing.
Right.
Non-conforming.
Okay. So is that an issue?
I don't think that's an issue.
Okay.
Because I think you would just find that it's pre-existing.
Okay. So the only issue is the lot 203, I think it was, in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Which is needs a stamp of approval. Okay, I got you. I'm good.
Yeah, I understand.
Fair enough.
Stephen,
I got it.
Did Gil get it? I think he got it.
There's just so much going on.
That was great.
I think where I'm sitting, my question is where we're going next. So,
well, I mean, if we were to approve this, it will be with the condition that the back, the both lots in the back will still stay as a roofing company.
Yes, sir.
Period.
Yes, sir.
And any changes that would need to be made would have to be reappear in front of the board again.
Exactly.
Right. Absolutely.
Understood.
There you go.
Those are certainly acceptable conditions.
It's not possible that you could sell one lot.
We're not
going to.
We don't have to ask the question because the answer is no. Because it's going to be tied in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that correct. Because they only function
together.
Unless the roofing business were extinguished from both.
Right.
You and we're not talking about needing an easement to I guess accommodate the commercial uses in the rear of the property since it's in the rear.
They're in unified ownership, so you don't need an easement from one to the other.
Only if there's a change, if there are two different owners of each lot.
We'd have to give up the roofing business.
Okay.
I think
this is the English family. I think it's one big happy family. These lots, and we got some roofers, and we got some residents, and we got some of these. And so it's like the Eagles. Good night, Paul. Good night, Paul.
That's the Wolves.
Thank you. I was busy going to law school.
Just so
was
on. I never watched that show.
Are we ready to make a motion?
Well, I don't know whether we have public out yet, and I don't know whether Steve is happy with site plan issues for this, or didn't you get to that yet, buddy?
This is why I was asking the question of how we're doing this instead, because if we're just, if the ask is that it exists as it is and they want to continue using it as it is, are they allowed to place conditions to improve some of the situation?
Yeah, because we're going to give them variance relief to do it because it was never ratified.
Does variance relief make the appeal obsolete, though?
If we get across the finish line, I don't care whether it's column A or column B.
Right.
Okay.
Do we need to address the appeal?
If we get the D1 variance relief, I'll withdraw the appeal.
I don't think if we get to the D1 TC, I don't think to answer your question, no, you don't need to.
Okay.
Because, and I know you all read it. If you read the stuff that was filed, it was going.
I'm so confused. I'm so confused. Like, I think I boiled it down to that the business was permitted in an October 91 planning board meeting for the rear of Lot 14. That does not seem to be in question to me. The issue arose, and I guess what you're appealing is the ability to conduct the business on Lot 15 as well.
In a way, but when we applied for the CC, Contingent Certificate of Occupancy, Certificate of Contingent Occupancy, I forget the name of the official, but he denied the ability to continue the rule
on Lot
14. So that was the appeal of the administrative order.
That was Bill Islin, who couldn't figure out.
If you don't know, I feel like that either approving, well, let me ask this: do we have to do something with the appeal to get to the variance request? Considering they were two separate applications.
Well, the applications kind of merged as a part of the presentation, TC.
Okay.
So if
I know, but I mean, it's
if you all decide that you want to treat it with the way I was going down, then I would just take care of the resolution for you, and the appeal would be rendered moot because the board decided it would take full jurisdiction. I think that's the way I do it. The appeal would be rendered moot because the board decided to take full jurisdiction over the entire parcel. Here's how we want to address it now and for the future.
Because if we approved the appeal, that would end it. We would not have any ability to place conditions on the final.
Yeah, you and I have been around each other.
I know, a little bit. So, and denying the appeal is unnecessary if we are going to proceed to
the D1
variance.
Yep.
Okay, I'm clear now.
As much. Did we get some proofs?
I believe the engineer has.
Okay. Does anybody from the public have any comments to make?
Where I wanted to go, that I can
okay. I'm sorry, Steve.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm hearing that we're going forward with the site plan presentation to the proofs point. So I think some discussion about the site, what the variances actually are, how that's operating, in order to address any conditions the board may have, is where we're headed. Is that what
yes,
we're
I still on? I still need variance relief, I think. And site plan is subject to the pleasure of this body. I mean, we're standing here, we're prepared to make reasonable concessions, of
okay.
course.
So.
Yeah, I think they got to make some proofs, but I think
yeah.
now at least we know where the bumpers are and what lane, how you can stay in the lane.
Okay.
Let me just ask, it's now 9:30. We have one other application behind this. We have a curfew of 10 o'clock, Mr. Chairman? Or do we not have a curfew?
We do not have anything after.
No,
this
is
the other
thing. Yeah, was set.
They were just both of them wrong.
This is it.
Yeah.
Well, it's
four.
It's your curfew.
Right here.
It's wonderful evening. Shut up, Mike.
Should I proceed?
Yes.
I would call Anthony Marucci. Could I ask that the board extend Mr. Marucci the courtesy, allowing him to sit.
He can stay at the table if that would be easier, Counselor.
That's a bit.
Mr. Marucci, it is so good to see you.
It's a pleasure. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm
for
still.
For the record, I never knew Mr. Marucci. I did an application before his board, standing in his place for public service. So, and then we realized we had lots of people in common, but we had never bumped into each other.
Hopefully you treated you well.
Oh, I never want to see him again. Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth and proceed before the board tonight?
I do.
And what is your name, sir?
Anthony Marucci, M-A-R-U-C-C-I.
Mr. Marucci, you are a what in the state of New Jersey?
I'm a licensed professional engineer, professional planner, and licensed land surveyor.
And by whom are you employed?
Marucci Engineering Associates, LLC.
And how long have you been doing this?
I graduated from North College of Engineering in 1973, which is now New Jersey Institute of Technology. I received my professional engineer's license in 1978, my planner's license in 1979, and my surveyor's license in 1981.
And
you want me to give
you? All valid
my license are all valid.
And you currently represent not only individual applicants, but people see you live, of course, in person or representing the
I am a zoning officer in the for the Township of Bloomfield. I also serve as the planning board and zoning board engineer for the Township of Bloomfield, and I've served other municipalities as well.
Is the board happy with his credentials?
No.
At this point, can I sit down, please?
We want you to. Would you rather tell me if you're going to sit at the table?
No, I'm okay here.
Or the bench, maybe?
I'm okay. Now, I think one thing I would like to do to keep this a little bit in line and a little order is you've heard all the proffers and all the debate and all the going back and forth. As far as you know, you don't have any disagreement with anything that was said tonight, do you?
I agree with all.
At least by your count.
By my count, I agree with all of it.
It's all yours now.
Okay. You were engaged, Mr. Marucci, to perform a planning and zoning analysis in this case.
Where's my folder?
Okay, of course.
And my notes.
I pulled
okay.
your pictures out of it.
Okay. Just give me one second.
Thanks.
Just before you get started, does anyone want to take a 5-minute break or is everybody good?
I'm eager to get this over with. I'm eager to get this over with. We can keep going.
Understood.
engaged to prepare a site plan, is that correct?
Well, first we prepared the property survey, which is incorporated into the site plan. We performed that survey on January 4th, 2025, and the site plan that's up on the board there was prepared on August 1, 2025. In the existing condition, as was said, number 203 East Blackwell is a three-family with a vintage of about 1900 when it was constructed, and that has the vacant office space on the ground floor. 207 is a single family, and that's a vintage 1908. In the rear of the properties, there are frame garages and other accessory structures behind both 203 and 207. And and in the rear is the contractor storage, which is the roofing business that's been discussed. Under the current zoning, it's a C1 retail commercial zone. With respect to the houses in the front, again, being that they were constructed between 1900 and 1908, they were developed even before zoning even existed. In preparation for my testimony, I did some research. I researched the 2007 master plan with an emphasis on objectives, one being to provide effective buffers on non-residential properties, and that future land use was transit-oriented development. In addition, I went through the 2018 master plan reexamination report, and specifically East Blackwell Street, which has an area of conflicting land uses, and it's also the gateway to downtown. One of the comments in the reexamination report was that the area could benefit from strong design standards and financial incentives given the floodplain impacts associated with the Rockaway River. And then also I looked at the 2025 housing element and fair share plan, which actually makes the comment that Dover is a fully developed community. I believe we went through the notice of violation that occurred in 2024 about the roofing company not being approved on lot 15.
14.
Well, but the actual notice of violation says to move everything onto lot 14 and not leave it on lot 15. According to the applicant, he purchased the property in 1989 and developed
the. Let's get down to the section 101.
Sure.
Positive and negative criteria.
I'd like to get into the positive and negative criteria.
I want you to get into that, but I want you to really also get into the site plan.
Well, as far as the site plan, basically, that's the survey. That's all existing conditions. So with respect to the site plan presently, we're not proposing anything other than allowing or keeping the roofing business on both properties in the rear. So right now, there is no proposal for anything, any other improvements at this time.
Okay, but Steve, there's never any real site plan approval for the 101.
Correct.
So that's all.
And I just received this letter this evening, so we'll get into
that. There's no blame there. We just figured it out.
But I just wanted to go into the positive criteria. The fact that the roofing business has existed on both lots for over 35 years, and the applicant testified to that. In my opinion, the site is particularly suited for the roofing business. It's buffered aesthetically from East Blackwell, and the applicant stated that the two houses in the front completely block the roofing business. Whether you're driving down East Blackwell or walking on the sidewalk, in either case, you cannot see the roofing business. And the only time you see the roofing business is if the trucks leave in the morning to go to a job site and then come back in the later afternoon. It's also buffered by the existing properties on either side, as was described by the applicant, with the U-Haul trucks and the auto repair, auto body on the easterly side, and the construction company and two residential structures on the westerly side. And obviously we have the Rockaway River to the rear of the property. Also, as far as the positive criteria, I believe the applicant stated that he and also the company that's there now employ local people. The use of the roofing business is a they provide services to the community. They're in the roofing business. The township's housing stock needs to be rehabilitated. New construction needs roofing. So they provide services to the township properties, residential and commercial, and also to the surrounding area. With respect to the aesthetics, the subject property is more in line aesthetically with the two houses buffering the commercial use than the properties to the east, which you have the commercial uses right up to the property line on East Blackwell. The subject property cannot be reasonably adapted to a conforming use due to environmental restrictions imposed by the flood zone and the floodway of the Rockaway River. These environmental regulations preclude any future development. And that's also part of the negative criteria, too. I believe that several purposes of municipal land use law are advanced. Purpose A, which is the general welfare, again, you have a history here of this use of operating here for over 35 years with no complaints. It provides services to Dover properties and the surrounding area. And it, especially even with redevelopments, obviously they need roofs. Purpose B, to secure from flooding. As the applicant stated, the Rockaway River floods, so nothing else can be developed on this site. It's going to flood. Hopefully it doesn't, but it's prone to flooding. And it sustained the floods in the past. Purpose C, to provide adequate light and air and open space. We're not proposing any construction, so the open, whatever is there is there. And purpose I, to provide a desirable visual environment. Again, the roofing business is completely buffered all around, and so I believe that that in itself provides a desirable visual environment. With respect to the negative criteria, I believe there's no substantial detriment to the public good. The roofing business is completely buffered. It's a benefit to the public for improvements to properties in Dover and in the surrounding area. It's existed for 35 years plus, and again, it provides local employment. The second prong of the negative criteria, in my opinion, there's no substantial impairment to the intent and purpose of the zone plan and zoning ordinance. And again, probably for the same reasons, for the length of time that's existed without any complaints. And again, like I stated before, the property cannot be developed according to current zone or redevelopment to the constraints of the Rockaway River. And in the C1 zone, there are no setback requirements, because I have to get into that with the C criteria that's in your planner's report. In conclusion, the site is particularly suited. The roofing business has been there historically. It serves the community and the surrounding area. It's sufficiently buffered. And also, I believe in the completeness review, the applicant was asked about an environmental impact statement, which they had completed a phase one in 2024, I believe. And the phase one, I have a copy here, the phase one mentions that there were no environmental constraints on the property, other than the flooding, obviously, but in terms of phase one. I have a copy of that if the board needs that. So I believe the application should be approved, and if the board professionals have any comments or require any additional buffering, I'm sure the applicant would be amenable to that.
That's the use variance. How about we get through the site plan?
Sure. Can I have the engineer's report? The engineer's report.
Steve will kind of lead you through it, Anthony.
Yeah.
So you can follow his prompts.
I'm going to look at Alex when I ask this question a little bit, just to kind of solidify what the variance asks are, what variances we're talking about up front, kind of the summary of variances from that report, right? I think we're all in agreement now that there's the conversation about the use itself. There's the, I'm looking at the outdoor storage, and I'm tying that to what's shown on the plan, is the containers, the trailers, things like that. I'm viewing that as a variance, because it's not permitted as accessory structures. And I was okay with the waivers. So from what's been presented, that's where I'm at with the variances. There was a comment in here about bulk table and kind of where everything else is at. I think I'm okay with where we're at as that being existing nonconformities, right? We're not changing anything.
Correct.
It's my focus when I start to look at this for the protect the town hat that I have to put on, right? There's this business that's operating back there. You've got all these outdoor features. Are they permitted? How are we using the site? How does it function together? So those containers, the trailers, the buildings, how's that all working? And what's, I know you're saying nothing's proposed, right? We're not putting in a new parking lot, but how is the site functioning now with those items? How are the residents parking, so on and so forth? It's kind of the broad question I'm going to ask, and then we can go one by one if you'd like.
Well, with respect to the resident parking is, as when you first enter the driveway.
Did I turn it off?
When you first enter the driveway at 207, there's an asphalt paved area behind the one family, between the rear of the one family and the garage, and that's all asphalt paved, so that's parking for the residential properties. And there's also a driveway, I think there are two driveways on either side of 203, residential parking. The roofing business would be beyond that residential garage in the rear, which is all gravel, and there's that large garage in the back. Actually, it's more than just a garage. It's a storage facility for materials and for the, you know, for materials for the roofing business. But in terms of residential parking, that's all in the asphalt area in the front. With respect to outdoor storage, I think I need Mr. Cipollini to help me with that. But yes, he has the containers there. He has the trailer. But the container, I believe he said, was for debris that comes from the once the job is completed, they fill the container, and then once it's full, that would go out and get disposed of in accordance with the DEP regulations. But other than that, I'll ask the applicant as far as what other outside storage he has.
Steve, if I may, proximity to the river is a concern, and I'm, you know, it's a long-standing structure. So, to the point about the equipment and all that stuff in the area, I have this may not be a question for you, it may be a question for the owner. What has been done to, I guess, mitigate the effects of a potential rain event or flooding proximity to
the property is fenced in, and there's a gate across to get to the yard, and in the back there's containers alongside the river. So nothing's floating away out of there.
Okay. It's how this goes.
And it's the nature of the business, is it not, that requires the shaped insulation and that sort of thing for flat roofs and what have you?
Yeah, basically it's insulation, screws, plates, equipment to take off roofs, that kind of stuff.
If this came in as a brand new application, we're going to put you, you're going to have to conform to the ordinance in terms of what the sewer is. Right. Here we've got items that are there. Alex raises a good point where I was going with the question about what's the length of the flood, right? And I hear there's a 30-yard dumpster in the flood way, not even a flood zone, right? The Rockaway River expands in the flood way with a 30-yard uncovered dumpster of roofing materials.
The water doesn't get that high.
I question the numbers just the same. I sit on your side during the week as well.
It's also not a permanent structure.
I know. So you don't need a DEP permit for it, but I'm looking from the town side. If it floods, you've got a dumpster full of garbage. What's going on with that? All this outdoor stuff in this backyard, it seems to have kind of... You can look at this at an outdoor area, right? We've got these trailers and containers now, and we're trying to separate resident parking, employee parking. I understand there's a fence and a gate, so they are separate, but we don't have delineated spaces. We don't know where we're at on... Do the residents have enough parking spaces? Does the business have enough parking spaces? There's a comment in here about lighting. Just from a site plan standpoint, I'm dancing this line of how we handle and kind of treat this, more so to protect the town in this whole arrangement. And I think that's kind of why we're here and probably why this violation came to light with how this is going on and what's actually operating back there. So it builds on the idea that it's... was approved on one lot, now spread to two, but then how that's operating, I think we want to hear more about from the board professional standpoint, as Alex shakes his head. It's one thing to say it's there and we want to keep it that way, but I think in my letter, and I think in Alex's, John McGonagall's letter, you're
right.
I call you John today, but I think he kind of picked at some of the same things that for the board's benefit, there's probably room for improvement there.
I know that Mr. Cipollini had discussions with the roofing tenant, about neatening things up. I'll leave that to him to expand on.
Yeah, I mean, there. If it gets out of control, I hold them to the task of making sure the place stays neat and orderly. I'm sure, season when things are rushing, they make it a little sloppy, but they're not. It's not nothing hazardous back there. They just, keeping the place neat and orderly, which is pretty important on my list.
Steve, normally would you require, I don't know if the code requires this, but placement of some kind of, avian basket or something like that, just to kind of as a condition, I guess, or to mitigate flood issues on the property.
I mean, being there in the mapped flood way, I don't really want to add structures to the whole thing, right? I'm going to send water at other people. I'm really asking the question, and I think the board should be asking, do those items need to stay, is kind of what I'm getting at. How do we protect them?
Those are rolling stock. There's a forklift, rough terrain forklifts back there, different equipment, saws, that kind of stuff.
I don't think they're concerned about the equipment. I think they're concerned about the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean...
having a 30-cubic-yard dumpster, if it becomes a floater, that becomes a problem.
I doubt if that could be a floater. That's
why I'm not an engineer.
it's never been
but
that
the
big.
Question is there room or is there a way that the site could be reconfigured a little bit? To lessen any possible negative impact.
Give me a copy of my site plan.
I'm looking at photograph 4 here. It's just not an orderly outside that building? Can some of these things be consolidated into that? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think the stuff that you see on the outside there, that's bulky insulation. It's either 4x4s or 4x8 sheets, and it's bulky. And it comes and goes. You know, it's left over from a job, it'll come back and sit there till they need it for another job, then it'll get put on a truck and sent out. So it's not like they're stocking that kind of stuff. It's basically for rolling stock and equipment, and then any overflows from jobs. That's what comes back to the yard.
So this garage, what goes on in there?
That's they store equipment in there, saws and screws, that kind of stuff.
It's kind of where I'm going, right? You've got this garage. Alex will look at me and shake his head one way or the other, but to the point of kind of parking the vehicles back there and equipment and things like that, things that move, I think if there was delineated parking spaces, that would be more preferable than what we're seeing in that photo. Mm-hmm. So where you've got a garage. So if some of the stuff that is outside in this photo is because it's still inside, and you've got assigned kind of parking situations, I think it's a cleaner way to kind of handle this as opposed to that photo and containers here and a trailer over there.
But if I can ask, how do you delineate parking spaces on gravel? It's a gravel area.
That's part of why I was asking how we were parking certain things. I'm open to a discussion on that, at least identifying the area that, okay, we've got this forklift here, a man lift here, and then the trailer that goes out with the pickup every Tuesday when they're doing roofs. Okay, that's outside. This stuff from this photo is inside that building. From the flood aspect and just from a site cleanliness.
Yeah, and the residential and the commercial is commingled, right? So for both residential structures, that the parking for the residences is also in the rear of both properties, right?
And there's two in the rear of each of the two properties. Yeah.
There's separate parking for 203 and separate parking for 207. There's two driveways on both sides and parking in the front.
And then is it
as well as parking in the rear of 203.
Alex, that's what I said. If you look on the plan where it says asphalt,
yeah.
That's what the residential parking would be for both properties. Beyond that, where it's gravel is part of the roofing business.
Mr. Marucci, I'm just going to ask to clarify, and I'm going to point at this. We're saying this area of asphalt behind, which lot is this? On lot 14 is the shared parking area for both residential uses?
Well, there's actually three driveways.
203 has two driveways on either side.
Yep.
I'm going to ask the applicant.
I'm good with that side. It's the lot 14 parking behind the residential building being used by both residents.
It's earmarked for 203, lot 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad you said it earlier. In your 45 years, this is a first for me too. So.
I have a question for the engineer. Do you think we're going to resolve these issues this evening? Because it is almost 10 o'clock, and it really feels like that this requires quite a bit of conversation between you and the applicant to get this to where it needs to be.
What I'm going to say here is that I think the board should probably weigh in on what their recommendations also are, in addition to what I'm saying, because there's only so much I can require of them ordinance-wise.
Don't worry about the ordinance, because it was a use variance. So
right, that's part
we can do
it. I think that's where it
is. I think Steve needs to hear any additional concerns so that then, like TC just suggested, could be worked on between now and the next hearing.
Uh-huh.
And that way, it probably would take not very much time to finish it up. So whatever concerns you all have, you're ready to just throw them out. I think what I heard was we have to get a site plan that delineates where vehicles are going to be kept back there, where other materials will be kept back there. From here, I don't know what you're
Yeah, those are my concerns also.
Are you suggesting that these ancillary containers be removed?
Given the flood zone concerns and the overall appearance of the site, that is a recommendation.
Yeah,
that would work a horrendous hardship because of the...
Or at the very least moved farther
perhaps
away from the riverbank.
Well, I thought you said rebuilt.
Well, no, I mean, I think it...
It's always working compromise.
Worst case, you know, removed. I mean, if we obviously don't want to cause a hardship, but we also don't want stuff floating into the Rockaway River.
Also a hardship.
So, right, to save a hardship. So, a hardship creating a hardship. If the containers could be, if removal is not possible, if you're telling us removal is not possible, then at the very least, there does need to be either some consolidation or reconfiguration of the rear of the property to make said containers less susceptible to floodwaters.
You want to move obviously away from the bank of the river.
I'd like to see more protection from the river and a more orderly kind of just overall site configuration.
Understood.
If I may, leaving containers along the river, I think protects the environment. Because anything, if there are floods, some of that insulation could float and the container stop it from going into the river. So that was the reasoning for putting the containers along there. There's not a chance of the containers floating. That's not going to happen. They're basically there. They keep some equipment out of the weather, and they keep whatever's supposed to stay in that yard in the yard. So, you know, we've had a lot of experience with the floods over the years. 35 years, we've had quite a few floods over there. So we made the adjustments accordingly, and this was the best thing we could come up with.
My way in, and this is a very peculiar case, I think, to say the least, as everyone has said. If this was coming before, and it really underscores the importance of zoning, right? And so in today's world, like, none of this conversation would be happening. We would never allow the intermingling to occur, but this is something that's happened, sort of grandfathered in, if you will. We would be foolish as a board also just to say, keep going. I have concerns. One of the testimony, I think, was it is a gateway to Dover, right? That coming down, you know, Samus Avenue or Salem Street. And so while you may not be able to visually see all of that, what's going on back there, I do think it's a fair, you're looking for relief from us. I think it's a fair question that the board has to sort of how can we tidy things up back there. To say that insulation is going to float away if there's a flood, then I would say, why is there insulation out and about, right? Shouldn't that also be locked up somehow? And so I think, you know, as earlier suggested, perhaps the two parties get together and figure out a way to make more sense. There's a lot going on there, right? We have multiple dwellings, we have cars, we have businesses, we have trucks, we have supplies, we have a river. I get it, that's how you got it, but it's our to also, you know, make sure that we're doing the right thing here too.
Yeah, and respectfully, I just see an insulation and a container problem now, not just a container to fix an insulation problem. So, with respect, I would like to see a consolidation of those materials, also as well as some kind of solution for that container too, out of the interest of the town.
Container weighs 6,000 pounds empty.
Okay, you know what? I think you're hearing what they're saying. You got a very talented team here. So my suggestion would be you take what the board is saying. I don't have a problem, as you do, counsel, with you folks meeting with our engineer and planner to discuss this between now and the next meeting. I'm certainly not going to go. There's certainly no reason to do this unless you want to. Dover's lovely.
I would make a mess.
So I'm thinking that if they came in, provided some kind of a plan like all the commissioners here are talking about, mm-hmm. I think then the next meeting would go pretty smoothly.
That's what we're seeing.
Are you suggesting a field meeting maybe? Or Woodhouse, or Alex, or...
Whatever you want.
That's fine.
Field meeting, you know, put some stuff on the back of an envelope, put some...
That's fine. I'll give you a call and we'll set something up.
So in that case...
Just see if there's any, I don't know, the homeowner...
I don't think there's any public.
Yeah.
My son's a lady.
No, I want to make sure there's no public.
That's my son back there.
So I'd like to make a motion to carry application Z25-02 to our November 6th meeting.
My second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
November 6th.
Yes.
No further public notice? Thank you all for coming, I understand.
We need to close.
Yes.
I make a motion to adjourn, everybody, hold on.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Score.
What's that?
I wasn't expecting this.